Welcome to the Heavens Devils podcast, a Forest Green Rovers podcast by two Americans who don't know what they're talking about. My name is Nathan. This is Sean.
Heavens Devils podcast. Not even Thanksgiving. We're already feasting. Feasting on FGR goals. Let's go.
I love that, Shimmy. We are feasting, baby. FGR goals. Let's go. Through the roof. Well done, Shimmy. Well done.
Yeah, what a return after 10 days, right? A 10-day respite from the game. We thought we might be rusty, but man, that was great. What a performance.
We was not rusty, Shimmy. Not rusty at all. Goals galore. The goals keep coming. 30 goals on the season so far, which is currently tied for second place in terms of goals scored. But keep in mind, we still got a game in hand on the first place team in terms of goals, which is Leighton Orient. They got 31. Only one goal ahead of us. We're going to crush that on Tuesday when we play Barrow. Yeah.
Everybody screaming, gang, gang, gang.
Jimmy, how we feeling, brother?
Hey, you know, in terms of FGR, great. We have so many nominees for GOATs on our team, and I was so enamored with that. I wanted to be a GOAT myself. But I didn't quite get it right, and I somehow ended up with gout.
Boom shakalaka! Yeah,
there you have it, folks. Shimmy Cakes has gout.
Shimmy.
Yeah. I mean,
Shimmy.
What a scandal it would be. Wouldn't it be a huge scandal if we had this, you know, we went vegan this year. We had the vegan podcast. We started following FGR, the Vegan Rovers, and it was revealed that all I was eating was red meat and organ meats. And this was the consequence, getting gout. But I have no idea how it happened. It wasn't me eating meat, but yeah, your boy has gout.
Wait, you actually do?
I actually do have gout, yes.
I thought you were joking.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So is that what's happening in your ankles?
I think that's what's happening with my foot, yes. I'm currently kind of hobbling around here, but at least we know what it is now.
Oh, wow, Shimmy. Let's go. I thought you were joking. You actually have gout. Let's go. Arthritis. We're getting old, Jimmy. We're getting old.
Well, you know what? Yeah, I'm going for the hat trick. Now that I have gout, hopefully I can get rickets and scurvy in the next few months and go with the old English
the old hat trick.
Trick
right there.
That was the 19th century hat trick where somebody got all three of those diseases.
Well, anyway, Shimmy, on to better things, brighter things. Mm-hmm. Saturday, Shimmy. Saturday. What a Saturday. A great day of winning, Shimmy. Especially for me personally. As you know, Shimmy, I coach robotics, so I couldn't watch the match. But in robotics, we also feasted, Shimmy. We feasted. Played six matches. We won five of them. 5-1 with the robotics crew. So we feasted. Then FGR dominated, also feasted, winning 3-1 over the Monkey Hangers. We'll talk about that in a bit. You'll love to see it. And then we had the Heavens Devils Derby. Derby. Shimmy. My Ohio State Buckeyes, the best college football team in the nation. Yeah, I said it. Beat your Michigan State Spartans, Shimmy, 56-7. But the Heavens Devil Derby, Shimmy.
Yeah, and that was a tough one. I still think we have a shout for maybe the Heisman for our running back, but that was a tough one. Yeah, let's move on.
Let's move on. All right, I'm happy. Anyway, yeah. Shimmy, I'm also so excited for this week, Shimmy. We got a huge week, rivalry week, in more ways than one, Shimmy.
Yeah.
Tuesday, the Forest Green Rovers face the old boss man, Marcus Cooper. Mark Cooper, Shimmy. Mark Cooper.
Marcus Aurelius
as Barrow.
Cooper. That's right.
That's right. Marcus Aurelius Cooper as Barrow in Furness come to town. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Will they bring the heat? Curious. That's the question.
Hey, Shimmy, another one. That's two. You're counting the
Shimmy gout,
joke counter.
This gout
counter.
Is doing wonders for, I guess, that's team.
The Shimmy joke counter. So we'll talk a little bit about Barrow in just a little bit. Saturday we have another potential rival, I guess, local team. Bristol Rovers come to town, and they are bringing with them one Mr. Raza, Asmataza, Aaron Collins, who rejected our contract in the summer, opted to join the Gas. Become a gas head, yeah. Bristol Rovers. So that could be a little rivalry. We'll preview that one with our guy Max from GasCast. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Don't like that.
And then, of course, also on Saturday, Shimmy, my Ohio State Buckeyes play in the biggest college football rivalry in the game, Ohio State versus Michigan.
Yeah.
It's a big week for me, Shimmy. A big week of rivalries, man.
Big,
rivalry.
Big. I actually wish
Bristol
you well
Rovers,
because
Michigan
State, is the,
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan is the interstate rival of my alma mater, Michigan State. So I'll actually wish you well on that one.
We're aligned, Shimmy. Yeah. Let's go. We're aligned. Here we go. But Shimmy, what a pod today, Shimmy. What a pod we got today, Shimmy. Massive pod because of our guests, obviously. Not massive because of us, but massive because of our guests.
Yes.
First up, we brought back Kip Kowalski and Tony Graw. They took a little break. They are back to recap the Hartley Pool match. They were up on the North Shore watching Hartley Pool for Screen Rovers. Then we got, who do we got next, Jimmy? Oh, we got two FGR players who are going to blow you away. Absolutely. Blow you away. I mean that, Jimmy. It's an awesome chat. You are going to love this. From the women's team, we have on the leading goal scorer in the world, Hattie Jones.
All she does
and
is score.
We also have on, all she does is score. We also have on the titan of the team, the heart and soul. She bleeds FGR lime green blood, Shimmy. Charlie Rowland.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. It was amazing. It's an unbelievably fun, insightful, inspiring chat with two FGR players who are just doing amazing things on the pitch and are so wise, mature, funny, cool off the pitch. You are going to love this chat, man. You are going to love Charlie. You are going to love Hattie. And
we learned so much about the women's squad as a whole just from the two of them, right? Describing their teammates. So definitely tune in for this.
It's an awesome chat. It is truly an awesome chat. You are going to love it. And hopefully it inspires some more of you to get out there and support our women's team because they are doing awesome things. Quality football on the pitch. Quality human beings off the pitch. Awesome chat. Cannot wait for that. After we chat with Charlie and Hattie, we have our guy Max, Mad Max from the Gas Cast. Max Alderson joined us from the Gas Cast, an awesome Bristol Rovers podcast and community. Gets us all hyped up for the Gas on Saturday.
And also informs, educates us about the Gloucester Road crawl, the long journey, the odyssey Gloucester to make Road it to Pub the Bristol Rovers ground.
Which we're going to do in April when Sean and I are there. Our first, I think it's going to be our first ever FGR away game. Bristol Rovers away. Cannot wait for that. Anyway, big chat with Max. Big Max. Big thanks to Max. And then also we got on Statman, who's going to drop some stat bombs on us to close it out. So big pod today. Big pod. Before we get to Kip and Tony, before we get to Charlie and Hattie, let's quickly talk about Hartley Pool. Man, Shimmy, big match. Unfortunately, as you know, couldn't see it because of the boss competition.
Yeah. I also cannot see it just due to the FGR stream in general.
Oh, yeah.
I was having real problems with it. But Kit was following along with Billy Hunt and Ash on the commentary.
Big shout out to Billy Hunt and Ash, too. We got a lot of little shout outs, like sub shout outs, allusions to us. It was so cool. I didn't hear it, but I got a bunch of texts like, oh my God, they just shouted you out. Oh, they mentioned, a podcast with Luke McGee on it. Wonder which one that could be. And then they mentioned the monkey hanger story, which I'm so sad that I missed. The monkey hanger story. What a nickname. We got to get the Hartley Pool guys on the next pod that we have because we got to ask them about that nickname.
Yeah.
The monkey hanger story. Incredible. But anyway.
I just thought it was the British term for like monkey bars that we have here that little kids play on a playground. It's like, oh, you want the monkey hangers.
Monkey hanger. I love it. But anyway, big win, Shimmy. Big win. Three goals in the first half. When I saw the first one, the JMT goal after like 4 minutes, I was like, I was worried. Going into this match, I was a little worried. Like you said in the beginning, I thought we'd be a little rusty. Mm-hmm. We were not rusty.
Our first
Shimmy.
15 minutes back in any match is never great. So we figured after a long break, it might be even worse.
Yeah. But no, they showed up. They showed up to play. Three goals in the first half. Watching the highlights, man, talking to fans, it sounds like it was just a dominating performance. We'll talk about the goals in a second, but a lot of praise for Sads, as they call him, Sadu Diallo. He got a lot of playing time for the first time really all season in a league match. Did he get this much playing time? And he, from what I hear, he showed out.
Yeah, so much praise for him online.
Yeah, from the limited highlights that I saw, he seemed to play really well. Our boy Drippy Dom also getting a lot of praise. I know there's that penalty, but getting a lot of praise from people. And then the goals, man. First JMT with that powering header. Beautiful header. Beautiful header. You don't see him score a lot of goals, but when he does, man, that was beautiful. Beautiful. And then Maddie Stevens, man. The people's champ himself. Maddie Stevens fires a beaut.
What a strike.
Bounces, pings, bing bong, Shimmy. Bing bong in New York. Little New York reference for you. Bing bong. Joe Byron. Bing bong's right off.
I'll say it right here and now. If I shouldn't say if, when FGR win automatic promotion and win the league, we have to show out like New York fans, New York Knicks fans did after the first game of the season.
After
winning one game, the first game of the season, the New York Knicks fans won. Find it online. They just went insane. So we'll do the same. We'll do the same. A lot of bing bongs in the future.
So anyway, speaking of bing bongs, Matty Stevens launches one. Almost a beautiful goal, but it wasn't. It was instead a beautiful assist right off the bar. And then Jamal was right there to tap it home. Beautiful, beautiful chance by Matty Stevens, and excellent awareness, situational awareness and positioning by our boy, the real deal, Jamil, Matt, to put that away. 2-0 the Rovers. And then the last goal was also beautiful from our boy Matty Stevens, the people's champ. All he does is score goals. Nice little turn, shoot, again off the post. I guess it's the boxer shimmy. He's always got to hit something. Can't just hit the net. He's got to hit something else. He's got to hear. He's got to feel. Got to feel the impact.
Yeah, the net has to feel the body shot first. So it's like taking the body shot to the post and then the knockout, riffling the net.
Let's go. And then Hartlepool get a goal and a penalty in the 80th minute. We don't need to talk about that, Shimmy. We don't need to talk about that. Keep it positive here. Positive vibes only right now, Shimmy. Yeah. But Matty Stevens, man, 3 goals. In the last 3 matches, he scored in each of the last 3 matches. 3 consecutive matches in a row scoring, Shimmy.
It's incredible.
How special would it be, Shimmy, if he can make it 4 on Tuesday against Mark Cooper and Barrow? How cool would that be? Mark Cooper, the man who, well, Matty didn't explicitly say it. You got to imagine there's a little bad blood there because he didn't get a chance under Cooper. He did not get a chance.
Right. So the motivation is there.
He's getting his chances now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It would be so sweet if you got a 4th goal against Barrow. Anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about Barrow at the end, but great, great, great first match back, Shimmy. Any closing thoughts before we get to Kip?
Let's just keep rolling, man. We're feeling good. You know, we know that tough times are usually ahead in January and February, but I just love that we're maintaining our focus and we keep, you know, getting the goals in.
We are rolling, Shimmy, and we got a game in hand. My only fear is we don't end up like Carlisle, who last year, Carlisle at this time, were about the same as where we are now, just dominating, running the league.
Right.
And they ended up racking a ton of games in hand and were still winning the league, and then it all came crashing down. I hope that doesn't happen with us. I don't think it will.
But I like the depth of our squad, like Diallo coming in and doing well.
Yes.
Like, I feel much more optimistic this year.
Same. All right, Shimmy, let's get into Kip Kowalski and Tony Graw, who were at Hartlepool. After Kip, we will go to our awesome chat with two amazing humans, two amazing footballers, Hattie Jones and Charlie Rollins. Then we'll get to Max from GasCast to preview the Bristol Rovers match. We'll do our own little stupid preview of Barrow Infernus, and then we'll close it out with Statman, who's going to drop a stat on us and give us a recap of the women's match of the GFA Cup, which happened on Sunday. All right, Shimmy. Let's get into Kip. Here we go. Kip Kowalski here, and I'm joined by the Bayou Bebe, Tony Graw.
Bonjour.
We go up north to the seashore where Rob, the heartthrob Edwards, takes on the monkey hangers from Hartlepool, trying to be good vegans and avenge the wrongful death of an innocent French spy monkey caught in the wrong place at the wrong time.
C'est tragédie. It took them just quarter minute from the French Quarter to go ahead on all as all good nights start, with JMT meeting across with a header, scoring tête-à-net.
Goal, baby! And the crowd breaks into song. Oi, 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 oi.
See me right out of the defense on your FGR Live TV stream. Out for all that I can get. If you know what I mean. Bailey Cargill to the left of me. And Oaks to the right. Don't eat no beef. Ain't got no knife. In that day of his vegan life.
Cause I'm JMT.
Dynamite.
Hey, JMT. And I'll win the fight.
I win the fight.
JMT.
JMT,
watch me JMT. That was probably our worst singing yet.
AKA the best. The about.
Wait, was that? What, Tony? What is that voice? We go to the 30-minute mark when the people's champ, Matty Stevens. Wait, that no. Cut that out.
Where am I?
Oh, that's you. All right, go ahead.
We go to a 12-minute mark where the people's champ, Matt Stevens, was played in when his ball shot came back off the ball and our skipper, our captain, Jamil Matt, bundled in. Jamil's like the worm from Walsall, playing the best Dennis Rodman impersonation I ever done seen. Joie de vivre.
Goal to the Royal 2-0. We go to the 45th minute. It went in a moving tribute to the people's chimp, that is the monkey who was hanged by the Hartlepool hooligans. The people's chimp, Matty Stevens, gets the ball into the box, turns, fires, wall post, goal! The people's chimp, Matty Stevens, gets revenge for the people's chimp, Hartlepool spy monkey, and the traveling fans burst in the song. There's only one Matty Stevens, and there's the strike banner. And he's gonna knock out Floyd Mayweather. Rovers, avenge the death of the Hartlepool monkey and win this one 3-1 and stay top of the table, baby. Woo! Woo! Kip Kowalski, Tony Graw, the Bayou Baby.
That was, incredible. AC/DC. They went with a deep cut there. Normally at American sporting events, it's Thunderstruck, right? That's the AC/DC song you hear everywhere. But
that's true.
For JMT, they had to pull out the dynamite.
I played that at my wedding. It's a good drinking. Yes. Thunderstruck. You ever play the drinking game, Thunderstruck?
I have not, no.
It's not really a game. Oh, yeah. You have to take a drink every time they say,
Thunder.
Crap, how's the song go? Oh, yeah, thunder. Thunder. Yeah. So you're in a giant circle, and you have to drink until the next thunder. And so there's so many thunders in there, that's a lot of drinking. But there's a few places where there's a huge gap, and you get stuck chugging for, like, a minute. Anyway,
and you just die,
moving on.
And that's okay. It's a great game.
hey, there's a family pod. There's a family pod, Shimmy. Let's get off of drinking. Don't drink.
No, don't drink.
Drink responsibly. Anyway,
don't play the Thunderstruck game at a wedding. That's not good news.
Actually, anyway, whatever. Let's move on. So, next up, man. Awesome chat with Charlie and Hattie. Let's get to it, man. Let's just shut up. Let's get to those two. Those two are incredible. You are going to love them. Here we go. We welcome to the pod one of the shining stars of the FGR women's team, a savvy creator, a lethal finisher, and checking my notes here, currently the leading goal scorer in the entire world. The hat trick was coined after our next guest because she scores so many of them. Welcome to the pod, Patty Jones. Welcome, Patty.
Happy to be here. I'm excited.
We are excited. And we don't just have Patty Jones here. We are lucky to be joined by another star of this FGR women's team, a tenacious fighter who will outwork anyone, anytime, a forward who isn't afraid to make tough tackles. She's an OG FGR player. She scored her first goal for the club all the way back in 2014. 2014, Sham.
Whoa.
She moves on the pitch like Charlie D'Amelio, but she has tiger blood flowing through her veins like Charlie Sheen. She's the fourth Destiny's Child. Welcome to the pod, Charlie Rollins. Welcome, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
Welcome to the pod, guys. Good morning to you both, too. One of the few times we can actually say that to our guests overseas, because it is 5:30 a.m. here, 10:30 a.m. there, 5-hour difference. A little math right there, no big deal. I'm in a spare bedroom, so I don't want to wake up the wife. That's why I have no desk here. I'm just holding the mic. Old school, baby. But I am so excited to talk to you guys. How are we feeling?
Good. Happy. I'm really excited. I've been a bit nervous, but I'm really excited that this is happening. I think me and Char always talk about the podcast, like at training and stuff, and we always say how obviously we always listen in, but it's really exciting to actually be involved. So yeah, I'm well excited.
Oh, awesome. We are well excited too, and I'm going to start using that phrase, well excited.
yeah, you know, we hear so many great things from Chris Latham attending the FGR women's matches, but we never, you know, really get to learn about you guys. We're super excited to get to learn more about the team and you two as well.
Yeah, I feel like, I'm a little starstruck because you guys are like these mysterious celebrities to us, because we see your pictures, we read your names, but we never get to actually watch you like we do the men's team. So we're a little starstruck here too. Hopefully we can change that. It'd be great if we could broadcast these games. We saw the highlights. Shout out to Ollie Smith. Ollie's fantastic, death-defying highlight reel against Eastleigh, I think that was. But of all the games to get highlights, that was probably not the one we wanted to see.
But our 6-0 win last week, I think that's
That's the Marine Academy, yes. Right? That was great. That was a great highlight.
Yes.
He does a really good job. Ollie's amazing, and he puts a lot of effort and time into us at the club. So we're always really grateful for Ollie's effort.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, 100%. We're grateful too, because like I said, before Ollie put out the first highlight reel, we couldn't see anything. So big shout out to Ollie. I know he risked his life getting that first film too. So big shout out to Ollie. We love Ollie. So I did some Instagram research and I saw Charlie, some of your pictures from like way back in the day, 2014. And I noticed like some familiar faces that seem like they're still on the team today. Back when you were a little baby, 2014. Anyway,
there's something like Forest Green DNA with these players that have been to the club for a long time, or is like kind of a way or a culture that they bring. What is it that makes it kind of special?
You naturally, when you play for Forest Green, have a bit of a, it's so much more of a family than you find in most clubs you play for. I've played in a couple of different clubs in the same league, in higher leagues, lower leagues, and there's just nothing similar to the sort of group feeling you get as part of a club for Forest Green. And you constantly want to, you're drawn back there whenever you get the chance to go back, and you don't naturally want to leave.
Oh, that is beautiful. We actually have a listener question about that, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But I love to hear that. Oh, man, you really make it sound like a special club. We hear the same thing from the men's players, too. They're like, yeah, all the places go, you hear, oh, it's a great dressing room, blah, blah, blah. But it's not like, you know, Forest Green is actually different. That's beautiful, beautiful to hear. So Chris Latham, FGR Women's super fan and our official FGR Women's correspondent, gave us a scouting report for you two. So you guys tell us if this is accurate. So first, Hattie. He says Hattie is the complete midfielder. She can score, tackle, find a good pass. And then I'm inputting my own here, but from what I also have gathered, you are leading the world in goals. Not even Mitrovic can touch you right now. How many goals have you scored? How many games? And is Chris's description accurate, Hattie?
I don't know how many goals I've scored and how many games. I maybe...
You're on six goals. I want to play six games.
Is it six?
Wow.
Is it six? I don't know. It might be six, seven. I honestly don't know. But I've scored
that's
a few.
That's a good problem to have. I forget how many goals I score. So yeah, there'll be another one coming. There'll be another one coming, so don't worry. We don't have to.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I love getting stuck in on a tackle, and I also love going forward. And if I can find the Hollywood ball, I'll always find it. So definitely accurate, and I like to ping a ball. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love this terminology. A Hollywood ball? Ping a ball. This is awesome. Oh, I love you're teaching us so much English football language. I love this. Okay, Charlie. He says Charlie is a bit of an enigmatic forward. She can lead the line. She can dribble. She also can come deep. She happily makes tackles. Something rare for a forward. And she just works her socks off. I imagine she's a coach's dream. Do you think that describes your style of play, Charlie?
Yeah, it's always nice to hear so many compliments in one little sentence. But I think Chris might disagree with the coach's dream.
Well, we're talking to him tomorrow, so we'll ask him.
Yeah, and he'll tell you. Yeah, I'm a nightmare because I do work hard, so it means I expect it from everybody else around me.
Love it.
And I think I often ask that, including the coaching staff, that we're getting the best we can get at all times. And lucky for us at Forest Green, again, is such a special place. The staff really do put everything they can into what we're getting. And they work really hard for us, as do players like, you know, Hattie, and some of the other senior players are really important in passing that kind of hard-working culture down to these young girls that are coming through. Because it catches on, and it's contagious at training when one player is playing as hard as they can every day, and suddenly everybody else starts to do the same.
I agree with Charlie. It's really encouraging. Like, when you see, no matter what headspace you're in, if you're having a good game, bad game, if you know if things are going right or wrong for you or for the team, I think it's literally such an encouragement when you see your teammates running past you to make these tackles, or, you know, really putting in that work and really using their voice to like encourage you and support you. Like, there's literally, honestly, there's nothing that builds me more than having my teammates work hard for me and then expecting the same of me. Like, I absolutely love that. And when we have that at Forest Green, like week in, week out, like we all show out and I love it. It's class.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. We so have an cool. ignorant question here, actually, on that note. What is our record? Like, I can't find it online. What is our record?
I think we've won... we've played, what, six? I think we've won two or won three, drawn one and lost two or three. I can't remember. Which doesn't sound that good, but the games that we've lost, we have actually played well. The games that we've lost...
I thought you were going to say 6-0-0 because I feel like every time I follow all the Twitter, I don't know what, maybe it's just like wishful remembering, but I feel like we win every game except that Eastleigh game. That's the only one. What's that?
That's honestly, it's what it feels like. Even, you know, even the week, last week we, you know, we got the win. The week before we didn't, we lost, I don't know, what was it, 5-2? And we lost the first half 4-0 and then second half we all came out and we won the second half 2-1. So, we just need a bit more discipline sometimes, but even when we're not winning, we're still scoring goals and we're still playing, and we're such a strong unit that it's even that is encouraging, you know, like not to get the win but still show out is, you couldn't ask for more, really.
Yeah, absolutely, because like every season's gonna have its up and downs, right? Results aren't always gonna go your way, but if you're having that confidence in each other and like you said, that unity, man, just love to see it, because that's going to make the product on the pitch that much better too, right? When you're there working for each other, you can make those Hollywood passes, play those Hollywood balls. And so watching the Marine Academy highlights, which is awesome to see that level of play, like the 1-2s and that attacking threat. It's just rewatched it a few times. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I noticed the same thing. The quality is like awesome. I watched now the two highlight films that we have, or highlight reels we have, and maybe they're highlights for a reason. I don't know, maybe you guys were crap the other 80 minutes that I didn't see. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it was phenomenal. It seemed like a really fun watch. We're going to ask actually about that in a few minutes, like how do we get more people out to the grounds to support? But I just want to mention this really quick, just because I thought it was brilliant, from our guy Chris Latham, where he compared you to English supermarkets. He said, Hattie is Iceland, cold as you like, with her FA Cup volley and all-around game, capable of extra in those big games, a bit like the Iceland Christmas party range. I have no idea what that means, because I don't know what an Iceland supermarket is, but that killed me. And then Charlie is IKEA. All those twists and turns, but obviously they aren't supermarket like a Morrison's. I don't know what Morrison's is, but they also often have CDs like Kelly Rowland's in stock. Shout out Destiny's Child. And a salad bar to this next level. I don't know how that relates to you, but I love it. I want to talk a little bit more about you guys' background. So, Hattie, you have some American in ya. You, Indian Hills, Iowa. I don't even know how to say the other one. Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Murfreesboro? How do you say it?
It's Murfreesboro in Tennessee.
Murfreesboro.
Just outside Nashville.
All right. So that makes it a little better. It's not like completely middle of nowhere like the Iowa one seemed to be. But what were you doing there? Why did you come here? I love it.
I finished A-levels at Filton College, Bristol City, and I got a football scholarship, soccer scholarship out to America. Went to a junior college freshman year in Iowa and then got scouted and moved to a D1 school in Tennessee, MTSU, and got my degree, played a bit of football, and... that was that.
I love it. What made you like? Why did you want to go over there to play as opposed to developing your game in the UK, and developing, I guess, your education in the UK?
Yeah, right. Just the experience. I have my older sister did the same thing, and I have multiple teammates and people that I've played with at Bristol, like Academy Bristol City, that have done the same thing, and just the experience and. Just being able to go to America and, you know, say like I went to America, I got a degree pretty much for free. And I was, you know, traveling all across America during the season and meeting all these new people and playing this like obviously amazing standard of football with the facilities out there are something different. Like it's university, but the facilities are, you know, somewhat semi-pro professional facilities. So just the experience, and why not really? If you have the opportunity, you should go for it.
Oh, I love that. That's the beautiful. Attitude.
Yeah. Also, not many Americans can get an education in America for free. So you're killed it on that one.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are surprised, and maybe rightfully so, how well developed our college athletics are. Like, I went to Ohio State, right, which is a massive football school. We have a 110,000 person stadium that's sold out every game, and everyone from not the U.S. is like, wait, why are all these people going to watch college sports? But yeah, it's a big deal here. College sports are a big deal here. Did you ever find yourself calling it soccer instead of football?
Oh, so many. The girls ripped me because the team, they will rip it. I say it now. I say things like I'll say, like, where's my jersey? Or where's my cleats? Yes. Like, oh, like, you know, this is a nice field. And they will just completely take the myth out of me. For,
sure. All right. Listeners can't hear this, but Charlie's just shaking her head ruefully right now.
Let's go. Yeah. Jersey field. I love it. Soccer. Do you ever say PKs? I feel like that's also a very American thing to say PK instead of penalty kick.
No, that was PKs is the one thing in America that actually, it didn't annoy me, but you guys just abbreviate everything. There's no need. It's a penalty. You haven't got to say PK.
We're lazy over here. We gotta shorten everything. What was the biggest cultural difference that you noticed from your time there?
Cultural difference. I don't know. That's a good question. I think maybe just the standard of and the funding, I think, into college sport, or say college in general. I think that's maybe not really cultural, but because it's really not that different. I feel like, yeah, I don't know, but yeah, definitely just like you said previously, like the amount of emphasis that's put on college sport and the amount of funding that goes into these D1, D2 schools as well is something, like, it's honestly something. So I think that was the biggest difference, is in like seeing universities in England and then going to America and being like, oh wow, this is like university.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. It's, yeah, I don't know. There's pros and cons to it, obviously. Anyway, we won't get into a big debate about the merits of how much money we put into college sports here, but let's move on to a fan question for you, Hattie, from our man, Chris Latham. He says, you have goals, passing, tackling, all in your game, and you've recently worn the armband. He asks, how much did Middle Tennessee State University help develop you, really, and set up your football career?
I think my fitness, when you're at college, when you're at university in America, like the emphasis, like when you go out there, you realize, like, I'm a fairly technical player, I like to think, and I'm not the most fittest player in the world, but I can run. But you go out there and like the athleticism of some of these American girls, like, is honestly, like, it's unmatched. So I think really having to like push yourself physically, obviously train every day, especially in preseason, like, is grueling. So I think probably a big thing that, you know, D1 soccer taught me was just being resilient and really having to like put in the work, like no days off, you know, like you need to match these athletes, and if you can't, then you need to just put in the extra work outside of training time. So I think probably it just taught me resilience and just the fact that I thought I was a good runner and actually I'm not that great, so work harder.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it taught you jersey and field and PKs. I love it.
And cleats. Yeah, right, yeah. And cleats.
Oh, yeah. Cleats instead
cleats,
of boots.
Yeah, cleats.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie, on to you now, Charlie, the fourth Destiny's Child. Scored your first goal when you were a Destiny's Child at Forest Green Rovers all the way back in 2014. You are OG FGR, proper FGR, maybe, as they say in the UK. I have to believe that you, well, actually not anymore because you changed my perspective, but I was going to say I have to believe you're the longest serving FGR player on the team. Maybe that's not true, though. Is that not true anymore? Because you mentioned like some other serious OGs who were playing there when you were a little kid.
Yeah, I think it was a time when, as I sort of arrived, a lot of those OGs left for bigger and better things. And they sort of brought in us kids from the academy youth level. And I was excited to play with those senior players, and then they all disappeared. But that first year, yeah, I was 15 when I took the step up to the senior squad. And we were full of a mixture of age groups, but I was definitely the youngest there by a million miles. I remember being quite intimidated by the fact they were grown women and I was used to playing against kids that didn't really, you know, smack tackle into the back of you. And I was really lucky. My parents have always been really encouraging. My dad was, he was at every single training session, every game. He drove me across the country. So that helped me stick with it. And we ended up winning the league that year. And I was top goal scorer of the league that year.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
And that, I think that was it then. Once I'd had that positive season, that positive experience, I wasn't going anywhere, I think, for a while.
Oh, that's beautiful. We actually have a couple listener questions on that.
Charlie, and you, I think I read a little bit of an article that you kind of grew up playing with boys, right? Yes. You're an uncle that played for Crystal Palace and stuff. So do you think that helped you get over that intimidation you felt with like the grown women you were encountering when you first made the team?
As a, what you see now is with women's football being funded so much better, there's so much more opportunity for young girls now out there, especially in the UK. Because we were sort of a little bit behind you guys in terms of the women's game. So when I was a kid, there was only boys football available. Wow. It happened that all of my mum's friends had little boys, which meant that when we were going to play parties, I was just playing football with the boys all day. It suited me well because I was very good at it. And I stuck with it. I played for a local boys team until I was about 11. And they then brought in a rule in the FA that little girls weren't allowed to play with boys past that age group because of the physicality difference. But luckily, like you said, I think it did help me in terms of I had that basis of the boys didn't care that I was the only girl and they would absolutely pummel a tackle into the back of me and didn't treat me any different than they would their mate that was a boy. Which meant that when I did step up to the women's game, I think I naturally, I mean, Hattie will tell you, she takes a look at me all the time, of my aggression is unmatched on the pitch. I think that's a bit of a... yeah, that means that I want to win the ball at all costs. But I think that is, like you said, something that comes from playing with boys as a kid and then making that step up to senior football so early that I kind of had to just make that adjustment as quickly as I could.
Oh, that's awesome. And it seems like, well, based on my reading on Twitter, it seems like it's a controlled aggression too, because I haven't seen you get any red cards yet.
No,
do you have any red cards in your history?
Yes, I have. In my whole life, I have, I'll admit. I will argue no fault of my own. However, I think it's something that comes as maturity comes when you're playing football. You learn that the type of aggression you need isn't, you know, it isn't necessarily, like, again, a team like Forest Green, where our values are stapled in things like fair play and respect for anybody, any opponent, no matter how, you know, they're treating us, and our values are, we're representing the club more than anything. Every time we play against whoever it is or whoever we're talking to outside of football, we know that everything that we say and do is representing our team, and we sort of have to live and stand by that at all times.
Oh, I love that. I love it. We got a fan question here from Chris Latham. He, for you, Charlie, he says, you were once top goal scorer in the league the same season FGR got promoted. How does it feel to get that accolade and know that you were like such a big part of that promotion push?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's something that I think I always, it's always springs to my mind if someone asks me about a footballing achievement, that first pops in my head. I think mainly because I was so young, and it came so early on in sort of my senior career, that first season, I'd sort of started it in, I couldn't have asked for a better season. And it was recognised, which was nice. I got awards and it was sort of, it was shouted about, which was really lovely. But I think the downside is you then have high expectations and standards of yourself for the next few seasons, where it doesn't always go that way. And a bit maybe of an ego in that I was convinced that I was untouchable, and that because I'd scored that many goals, I was going to start and I was going to get 90 minutes every game. And you slowly grow old, and they bring in these new kids that have got that flair that I used to have. And you go, oh crap, I need to actually start working hard, which is where I think then I wasn't just a goal scorer after that. It became that I had to do those things like make the crunching tackles that maybe necessarily a normal centre forward wouldn't do, and make those box to box runs when I'm absolutely knackered and we've got 2 minutes left of the game, but I'm the only one that's willing to get back and do it when my teammates have been in the middle working hard all game and I've been at the top strolling around waiting for the ball. So this is my job now to go and help them when they've been doing it for me for the whole game.
Oh, that's really fascinating. Like how you describe how your role has changed, but also weird how it's interesting how you're like your perspective on age, because you act like you're an old woman now, but you're not. How old are you?
I'm 22, but in
22. Yeah, that's a kid. Crazy. You're still a kid.
I feel as young as those 16-year-olds when I'm running. But I think the attention around bringing in these young players means that you are always quite aware that their benefit is that they're young and fresh and they will run without tiring and they're fearless because, you know, they're not used to maybe the tactical and more knowledgeable side of the game, and they just throw themselves into it like a young prospect. So there's things that you've always got to be thinking about as you sort of grow into a football season.
Ignorance is on your side, right? You just go for it.
I love that. All right, we got another fan question here. You played for FGR and Cheltenham. Which club is better and why is it FGR? And I'm going to add this in too. Why do you hate Cheltenham?
It's something, obviously, as a Forest Green OG, I was given a lot of stick by everybody involved for going to the local rivals, Cheltenham. At the time, I think I don't regret my decision. It was the best opportunity for me at the time. Cheltenham as a club are very, very different to Forest Green. I've got to be careful, but I think the main difference is it was mainly my happiness in terms of I was playing at a higher level with Cheltenham around players that were just as good as me, if not a lot better, which meant I knew I would be developing. I knew I was fighting for the spots. Every day at training, I was working double time to impress the coaches and impress the staff and the players. But it didn't have that sense of family, that sense of social and sort of maybe mental positives that you get from at Forest Green. And it was a difficult decision to say, I've jumped ship to Cheltenham, but please would you have me back? Because I thought the grass was greener, but actually you just water it with sustainable water, which means it's really, really nice grass.
Let's go!
Love that.
Let's go! Wow. Yeah, and have you been like, are you an FGR fan? Like, have you been an FGR fan for...
Again, my dad is, when I started playing there as a kid, we were, as a team at Forest Green, in the National League, ran around in the National. And I was a bit like sort of poo-pooing it. Like, well, I'm not supporting a team that's like, you know, in the big leagues. And my dad would take me to the games and we got like season tickets and things like that. And we became really involved in the men's season, which again is part of that being part of the club as a whole. Even I think all of us would say in the women's squad that we feel like we're part of a Forest Green family. There's not a massive divide between us and the men. You know, the men are very vocal in terms of talking to us. I got a message from Jamma on our FA Cup games. He would message me, go out of his way to sort of say best of luck in the cup as the captain. He was coming to us and saying, showing his support. And it's something that I can wholeheartedly say, being at the clubs, you do not get that in every club. And it's something that's what's going to separate Forest Green in the long term from these other women's clubs in terms of the support they get from the club higher up.
Oh, that's class, man.
I think that's a great thing.
What's that, Sean?
Oh, sorry, Nathan. I think your audio went out there a little bit for me. Sorry. But it's just great that it's not like it's sustainable, not just in that eco sense, but like for people, right? Like you can, a place where you can find a home and be nurtured, and there's no like barriers between, like you said, the men and the women supporting each other and being there for one another.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's multiple girls on the team, myself included, that, you know, like before COVID, like I hadn't really played soccer, like football, for a couple of years. So I think I wasn't really that fussed about playing again. And then obviously Rosie Dimery, who's a close friend of mine, said like, oh, just come to Forest Green, come train. you know, see what you think, get involved again. And I was pretty set on not playing football ever again. And then coming to Forest Green, I'm just like, how could I ever think that I would never play again? Because honestly, like, we have so much fun as a team. Like, we work so hard for each other. We all get, like, the rapport among the girls is like the new ones, the old ones, like, is so good, and the coaches. So I think there's loads of the girls that, you know, if Forest Green wasn't a sustainable club in terms of people, like you said, you wouldn't be here. But yeah, it's honestly like one of the best clubs I've played for in terms of family. And I've played with girls in America for 3 years in a row and not felt this connection. So that definitely speaks volumes about the club for sure.
Oh, that's beautiful. Great. That is beautiful. I love it. Want to move on to you guys just personally, like how did you both fall in love with football?
Go on, Hattie.
I think I have an older sister that the girls, again, tease me about because everyone knows my big sister and not me. But I think she, growing up, watching her play and then, you know, joining in when she was playing sort of under 10 level, I was only, I don't know, 4 or 5. So I'd kind of go along and be on the sideline, like supporting, but trying to join in. And I think having that influence and my parents both very supportive of that and then encouraging for me to start playing, I think that was a big thing for me as I was younger. And then just growing up, you just continue to fall in love with it, I think. Every season, you know, depending on where you are, who you're playing with, but it's just such an exciting and competitive game. Like, I'm such a competitive person and I'm such a social butterfly that I think you can literally incorporate both those things into football. So yeah, I love it. I love playing football. And I definitely fell in love with it at a very young age, probably because of my sister and my family and the team that I was playing for and stuff.
Oh, it's beautiful. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I think I was the same. I was really young. I mentioned before about having only boys around me as a kid, which meant that I naturally was kind of forced, really, to play football. It just happened that I really did enjoy it and I really was good at it. I think then it came that I... As sort of growing up as a girl, you naturally have sort of thoughts and people around you in terms of just societally where you maybe you have the opportunity to stop playing and to fall out of love with it. And it comes in sort of waves, I suppose, because there were times where I went, oh, I actually don't want to play football because all of my friends now at secondary school when I'm 13 don't play football. But I chose with things like, you know, it's really important to have parents that are really supportive of things that you, as long as I was happy, they were happy. And whether it was playing football or playing with dresses and makeup, they didn't care. And then I think, like we said about Cheltenham, it came a point even when I'd made that senior jump where I fell out of love with football a bit at that point of my career, where making that move to a different club and not necessarily being in form or being around the correct environment means that you will fall out of love with it and you need to make important decisions then on how to get yourself back into those sort of loving football habits.
Right.
Oh, it's beautiful. Well, I'm happy you both are back in love with it. And shout out to I want to say Dim Sum, not Dim Sum, Dim Shady. For getting Hattie back involved.
Yes, sir.
Dim Sum, though. That'd be a good one, too. Let's go. Anyway, so do you guys... Actually, I want to ask, like, so I say you have young careers, but you kind of don't because you've been playing forever. I mean, it's crazy that you guys started at such a young age and been playing like at this high level for such a young age, and you're still young, but you consider yourselves kind of veterans. But I just wonder what life lessons you guys have learned from football.
I think I mentioned it as well previously about resilience, especially in America. I think one big life lesson that football's taught me is to be resilient and just to, you know, keep at it even when you're having a bad day. I was talking to my friend Jinjo, I'm visiting at the moment yesterday, about this podcast and about, you know, the whole football, and she plays football, she's a very good footballer. And we were saying how it really, you learn a lot of skills in football that you can actually take through to everyday life. And, you know, as an adult now, I can take things that I've learned throughout the years in football. And I think, like, you know, you're having a bad game, that doesn't mean you're a bad player. And same, you know, if you're having a bad day, doesn't mean you have a bad life. We all have bad games, bad days. So I think being able to recognize that there is a lot of skills that are transferable, and, you know, the importance of, like, building human relationships and building rapport and making friends that actually you'll probably keep for a long, long time. Definitely big things that I've learned in football is stay resilient, you know, play when you love and take breaks when you need them. And just appreciate the people around you because they will become your family. Yeah.
What a perspective.
Yeah, so well put.
Oh my God, that was awesome. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I think Hattie's sort of hit the nail on the head there. I think the whole resilience thing is massive. As a growing up playing football, that does come naturally. It makes you a resilient person because you have to learn to take those bad days, like she said, on the chin. I think for me, the main thing I can always pick out is just my sort of discipline in terms of like that hard working aspect, which I get sort of stapled with a lot. I think mainly comes from a discipline aspect of, you know, always being there at training, always being on time. When you don't want to go, you still go anyway because you're doing it for your teammates and you're doing it because, you know, I've chosen to put a career into football. So I'm not going to sort of half-ass it. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it for the best of my ability and put everything into it and be passionate about it. And just those little things like having to set alarms in the morning on a Sunday when all of your friends have gone out on the Saturday night and are hungover having a lie-in, but we choose to not have that because we would rather be up early on a Sunday, have a team breakfast and go and sit on a bus for 3 hours with each other and then play football because we love the life. And it's exactly what I would expect of all of them, which is why it's important for somebody to sort of carry that, I think, and try and push it for the rest of the team.
Oh, that's beautiful. You both mentioned different things. You know, resilience is so important in life. Not taking that, you know, not getting too high on the highs, too low on the lows, and not getting down on yourself, like you said, when you have a bad game or bad day in life. And then I love that you mentioned discipline too, Charlie. That's such a key to success and happiness in life, no matter what you do. Beautifully put. Oh, that's you guys should run a school. That was perfect. I want to know also I picked up another new phrase from you guys. Lion, having a lion.
A lion.
Have a lion someday, Sean. So that's when you're like hungover and then you're like you just don't want to get out of bed and do anything.
If you don't set an alarm and you go, I'll just lie in bed for a little bit longer. It's a lion.
I love it. Having a lion, Shimmy. We got to incorporate that in our lingo too.
Yeah, that's my Sunday through Saturday. I'm going to stay in bed for a little bit longer before I get out.
As we say at 5:30 a.m. Anyway, do you two support a club, a women's club, a men's club?
This is where I'm a bit of a fake footballer, where I've never really been like a diehard Liverpool fan, Man U fan. I think if I had to choose a team to support these days, it would probably be Tottenham Hotspur. And that's because I watched their All or Nothing thing on Amazon Prime and I just loved it.
Nice.
That was great. I agree. But Sham's a gooner, so Sham hates Spurs.
Yeah, I'm with Jam on that one. Got it.
Yeah, I didn't really playing at Bristol City, obviously, you know, for years sort of in the academy and then supporting the women's team there. That's my women's team, I would say, is probably Bristol City. Obviously, I'm Forest Green. Diehard Forest Green fan now.
I love that though. That's awesome. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, Hattie is one of my best mates in the world and I love his bits, but I can't stand the Spurs talk.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yes.
My family, in terms of my household, are all gooners. So it's just been something I've grown up around and I am a bit of a Arsenal addict, I suppose. I sort of it's painful to be an Arsenal fan.
It's the worst parts of being an addict. All of the withdrawals. You remember the one time it felt good in 2006 and 2003. It's all pain since then.
And then of course Forest Green have always been. I've followed them since I was sort of 13, 14, and every season I think the most excited I get about a football season is never really the Premier League with Arsenal. It's always what Forest Green are doing and how exciting it is being in the playoffs every year, or, you know, being top of the table, or sort of all of the excitement that came with switching managers recently and sort of to me, that sort of League Two standard, but following Forest Green is so much more exciting than it has been in terms of the Premier League for Arsenal. And then for women's football, the Arsenal ladies team, when I was a kid, were always the best around. Which was a bonus for me as an Arsenal fan anyway. But now you've got teams like Man City and Chelsea and the women's side that are flying and sort of taking over, which is now, is it really exciting to follow that women's football in terms of being an Arsenal women's fan? There's a bit more excitement in the league, a bit more excitement in the games and the cups and Champions League games and stuff, which we never really had before when I was watching it as a kid. So it's exciting.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And by the way, and I totally resonate with what you said about how, like, following FGR. I got into my first love of English football was Fulham, and I followed them for a long time, had a lot of good times, bad times, but nothing like FGR. It's just, like you said, it's just so much more fun to watch. It feels like, it really does. We keep, this is a theme that keeps coming up, but it really feels like a football family. And when you feel like it's a family, you know, you're much more invested in their success. And yeah, I totally identify with you there. Want to keep it moving here. I want to know, is there like a player that you, that either one of you kind of model yourself or look after or maybe look up to, maybe have learned a lot from?
I think, again, my big sister has obviously always been a strong influence for me. Watching her play, she's a fairly similar player to me, maybe a little bit stronger, get stuck in a little bit more. But she was always, growing up, she was always somebody that I really looked up to. And then I had a friend who I met freshman year in America, who sadly passed away a few years ago. But Steph Fowles, number 23, that's why I wear the number 23 jersey now. She was a big influence playing alongside her. She's one of the best center defenders I've ever played with. And such a light on and off the field. So she's definitely up there now with biggest influence, I think. And one player that I really look up to and always, you know, I'm striving to make her proud, I think. So, yeah, those two would definitely be standout for me.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I think in terms of personal people around me, my uncle, David Johnson, played for Watford in the Premier League. Which I think growing up, I used to look at him and think that was my dream. And he'd done it. He played in the Premier League and he'd lived that pro footballer life for Watford, and he was a number 10. So again, I think when I was a striker, I used to think, you know, I'm exactly like my uncle David. but then in terms of sort of how I play and sort of just my values as a player, I'm going to slander Spurs because I hate them so bad, but Harry Kane is everything I wish not to be in a striker. Like Cristiano Ronaldo, I think for me, his attitude more than anything and his mentality as a football player and a player that scores goals, is something for me massively. Is I look to him every time I saw everything that is plastered about him on social media is about how he works 10 times harder than any player that they've ever known in the Premier League. When everyone else is off season, he's in the gym twice a day.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have off days, and he's reaping that by, you know, his physicality as a nearly 40-year-old, and he's got the body of a 20-year-old. And yes. I think anybody would want that.
That's something that my wife is very fond of reminding me of. She's from a Portuguese background, so I always hear the praise of Cristiano Ronaldo CR7. Yeah. But yeah, she never fails to mention that. You know, he goes to the gym twice a day. It's like, oh, cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, he's
Ronaldo's fan.
Yeah, he's insane. Like you said, he's almost 40 and he's like still at the, you know, top of the game. But maybe that's gonna be you, Charlie. You're only 22, 36. I think he's 36, right? That's 14 years away. That's crazy. That's a lifetime away. When you're 36, we're gonna see you at Man United, or with FGR in the women's yeah, Premier League. Yeah. Anyway. So I want to ask you now, you know, with the emergence of the Her Game 2 movement, which is awesome, but also quite sad that it even, like, that it's 2021, almost 2022, and there's still incidences of, you know, discrimination and negativity just based purely on gender, which is so silly and stupid and sad. And I just wonder if you guys have ever experienced, you know, actually even in my language, you know, that was a gendered language, you know, you guys, you know. But I just wonder if you guys have ever, I said it again, but I wonder if you guys have ever experienced, cut that out. Have you ever experienced any kind of negative experiences as female footballers or even just female football fans?
I think growing up, yeah, I think like even like, you know, Charlie, I think you've said it maybe in the podcast a little bit earlier, how growing up and you play, you know, the school playground, you know, I'd be out at playtime and I'd be playing football with the guys, with the boys. And I think a lot of, you know, even kids then, like, oh, like, we don't, you know, we don't want her on our team because they think I'm going to be rubbish, and actually I'm probably was better than half of them.
Yeah.
And I think just like, it's just from such a young age, I think, to be told like, oh, we don't want you on our team, or you can't play for our team, or you're not as good as these boys, that's probably the biggest thing. And just questioning your ability and your knowledge too, like, you know, it's generic, but you know, blokes teasing you, asking if you know the offside rule, or, you know, asking you questions about, like, you know, like unrealistic questions that I don't follow the Premier League, I don't really care, but they'll ask me things like, oh, who's Arsenal's centre midfielder this year? And I'm like, I don't know. I play football because I enjoy it and I love it. And yeah, I'm good at
which
it.
Is why you should. Why you should play.
And I don't care about following, you know, anything else really. So I think, why are you always trying to test my knowledge? Like, it's not a competition. But I think that's the biggest thing. Just, they question your ability, they question your knowledge. And I think as you get older, I just don't really care anymore. Like, whatever, I know I'm a good footballer and I might be better than you, I might not be, but at the end of the day, I enjoy it. So you question me, that's fine, but still scoring goals. Top goal scorer in the world still.
That's right, that's right. what about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I think like Katty said, it's as I grew up, it's more from a kid's perspective, in that the boys naturally would do those things, like not include you or not pass you the ball because you're a girl. I got older, I think being around a club like Forest Green, I didn't have those experiences because it is such a friendly club, and they really encourage, you know, the women's side of the game to be equal. I interned with the club during my university years, actually, for about 2.5-3 seasons, and that was something that I then kind of scared myself a bit of. When I went in, I was the only female member of staff, and in my head it automatically rang alarm bells of, why do we not have any females in part of the backroom staff? But it is just naturally, if you know sort of elite football and how things are run, it's not a normal, and it should be, but it's not a normal case to find women as part of backroom staff for men's teams. But then the way that I sort of slipped into that role and was part of the staff and part of that men's first team, it was nice to hear from them things like how easy it was to have me around as a woman, when they maybe had panicked a bit themselves about things like, you know, making sure the changing room door shut when I walk past, and making sure they don't say inappropriate things like call me darling, or say, you know, something that I might take as sort of, you know, a little bit the wrong way. But I think it's important to have those conversations. I think I was more impressed with the fact that they came forward and said, listen, let's talk about it and have it out in the open so that everybody feels comfortable about it. Yeah. And it just makes it so much easier. So that's why the sort of Her Game 2 movement is so important right now, is because they're just putting the message out there and leaving it to the rest of the clubs to take that on, as that, you know, right, we're part of that movement, so we're going to do our bit for all the girls.
Yeah, having them as a sponsor is like paramount for us as a team. I think Forest Green stand for so many good things, and I think the involvement, especially this season, that the men's team have had with us, and, you know, the link that we've got with them now, I think that's a lot down to our coaches and our chairman David. But having that on our sleeve, definitely, you know, it might be silly. I don't know if maybe men might find it silly, but you look at it and you think, do you know what? Yeah, like, I am a woman and I'm a strong woman and I'm very good at football and I love this team and I love this club. So it's really encouraging to have that on your sleeve and just to look at it and think, yeah, like, I'm worthy. I'm a good footballer. I'm allowed to play it because it is her game too. It's everybody's game.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love to see it. I mean, even Nathan has some trailblazing, you know, your mom was a trailblazer in terms of coaching in Ohio.
Yeah, my mom was the only men's basketball coach in the state of Ohio. She's retired now, but she was a men's basketball coach for so many years, and she was the only female men's basketball coach in the state of Ohio. So yeah, at the time anyway. But yeah, that's beautiful. What you guys, that was awesome. That was, thank you so much for sharing that. That was beautiful.
Yeah, so, I can't agree more than, yeah, like how much you got. It's worth following the women's game, and, you know, it's still the same game. You still see the same brilliance, the same technical skill, the same excitement when goals go in, the near misses. You know, I remember seeing the Marine Academy highlight. Charlie had that shot going, just, you know, ricochet under the bar, off the bar, you know, the crossbar.
Yeah, shot about four of those. The crossbar would work.
Even go back to 2014, Charlie's first goal, which you can find on our Instagram page. That's also a beautiful little dipper right in the top corner. I mean, you're 100% right. There's no, like, there's, it is a beautiful game no matter who is playing it. And we hope that the women's game will continue to grow. We hope that the negativity, the discrimination, the stupid jokes will continue to hopefully fall out as, anyway, but we really thank you for sharing that. And kind of on that theme, what can we as fans do to help support and grow the women's squad and the women's game really in general?
I think these days, utilizing social media as much as we can, obviously, most people are on social media of some description. So I think having that platform and being able to share not just like Forest Green's, you know, our women's team, but everything to do with women's football, I think being able to share that and post it in your group chats with the boys, or post it, you know, talk to your family about it. I think just word of mouth and social media is such an important thing. And just showing up to our games too. Like, you know, we don't play at the New Lawn every week, but when we do, having fans come out there. I think me and Charlie have said it previously, and some of the other girls, the amount of support we had that first FA Cup game, you know, we had so many fans, like, and it was just like overwhelming. Like, it was crazy to think that they were all there to see us, and like the amount of confidence that gives a team, like, and a player, is you can't describe it. So definitely coming out and watching and just using those social media platforms is the way to go, I think.
Oh, that's beautiful. And big shout out to all the fans, you know, the fans who I know have consistently gone out. I know Chris Latham. Big shout out to our guy Ollie Smith too, from the Pod on Top of the Hill, who has done, you know, he works so hard to promote you guys. Long may that continue. We have one more question and then teammate talk. Are you guys okay on time?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. We're almost done, I promise. So actually, I forgot to ask a fan question from our guy, Shai Yazdi. So Shai asks, how's the food at FGR?
Vegan.
Yeah. Vegan. No, I love it. That's it. Just vegan.
It's all that needs to be said. Yeah.
So this Sunday is the GFA Cup match on Sunday, but this is actually going to come out after the GFA Cup. So we're going to assume that we won, assume that we dominated. How did we win that match on Sunday?
Go on, Sha.
Yeah, I think...
if we lose, by the way, we'll cut this out.
We won't.
We won't. Love that attitude. Yeah.
The same way we've approached all of our games this season is just with, in our heads, we go into it knowing that if we work harder than they will, and we work hard for each other, even if they're matching our work rate, then we know that that win's going to come. We're all really confident in each other. We know that when the ball comes to us as forwards, we've got a job to do, and we do it as best as we can. The midfielders work really hard for the whole team, and those defenders, if you look at sort of all of the results in the season, have been keeping those goals out really effectively. So it's just another thing that we've worked on all week in training. We work on it every week, and it's just what we do.
Dollar, yeah.
Yeah, another day at the office.
Yeah.
I love it. That's the spirit. Oh, beautiful. All right, we got teammate talk, and then we'll get out of here. So we want to get to know a little bit more about some of your teammates. So, you know, most of us can't watch or can't see the matches, you know, unless they're local, unless they actually show up, which they should all go show up. Go watch the matches if you're local. Sham and I would. We can't. We're a flight, you know, and a long flight away. Anyway, so this teammate talk is going to be more like an intro, really, for us to learn about some different squad members. So both of you can reply here, even though the first half is going to be themed more towards Hattie, because it's going to be Nashville/Tennessee themed. The second half is going to be more themed towards Charlie, because it's like Gloucestershire-based themed. But both of you can respond, because we just came up with stupid themes, basically. Anyway, so here we go, starting off. In honor of the NFL in Tennessee, which, by the way, they are the Tennessee Titans, which is the only, this football is the only football that us dumb Americans understand. But who is the Titan of your squad, in your opinion, and why?
Oh, The Titan of the team.
Titan of the team.
That's a great question. I honestly, Charlie, this is not just because you're present. Charlie Rowland is the Titan of the team. Charlie comes out and she works hard. She's a big personality for us, puts in the big tackles, scores the big goals. And she's, you know, present week in, week out. So I think Charlie definitely is a backbone for us. So she can be she's the Titan. You're the Titan of the team.
I appreciate
that. And it's not pandering because, you know, Hattie could have said me, but she chose not to. I'm here as well.
But
no, she didn't. So credit.
I love that.
Charlie, what
Let's
do you
go,
think?
Charlie, the Titan of the team. All right, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I'm taking that. I'm changing my Twitter name as we speak.
Hey,
let's go.
All right, it's confirmed. It's confirmed. Okay, so this next one is a little abstract. And so, Hattie, you may have to explain a little bit. But who is the human version of Nashville Hot Chicken on the squad?
Hot Vegan Chicken.
Okay.
Hot Vegan Chicken. So the player with a little added spice or kick to their game? Or if you can't think of that, who has the best wing play?
Oh, let's go. Well done, Sean.
Okay. Well, first of all, never really been a fan of Nashville Hot Chicken. There is a place called Hattie's Hot Chicken, though, so I'll take that link.
Nice.
I don't... Someone who plays with a little bit of attitude, a little bit of spice, has got to be Sam Morris. She comes and she brings the fight. She puts in those big tackles. She brings the sass, you know, when she's there. And going on to the wing side of it. So the wings, we've got Zoe as right back. She's solid. She always is pushing forward up onto the wings. And we've got Ella and Ninka, both very strong wingers too. So we've got a lot of representation in terms of chicken wings.
I love that.
But vegan,
love
vegan. We'll always add the asterisk that they're vegan chicken wings.
Thank you.
Yeah, no chicken wings.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Shout out to Sam Morris, the big intimidator in the back. Also, I love Ninka Rucker's name. It's just such a cool name, Ninka Rucker. Bringing the ruckus.
The cool person with a cool mom.
Yeah.
With a cool mom?
A very cool mom.
I love that. Shout out to Ninka Rucker's mom. I don't know if you're listening. Shout out to Ninka Rucker's mom. Your cool mom.
She's
going to
love that.
So Memphis is, of course, the home to Stax Records. So I want to know, who is the soul of this team? But I want to go to Charlie because I feel like maybe the answer that Hattie would have given would have been Charlie. So Charlie, besides yourself, who's the soul of the team?
Again, not just because she's here or because we're together, but Hattie is, categorically, she just ticks that box. And I think anybody that you speak to on the team would say that. I think this season, it was quite clear from the beginning we were going to need somebody to play that role and to get everybody from the first day of training into that, setting that standard that we're all here together as, you know, for each other. And Hattie, just every week she comes in and she's encouraging. When we need telling off, she does it in the right ways. You know, if we need a little bit of a kick up the ass, she'll do that for us, but in the way that's most effective to keep everybody happy. But then because of her own standards, we can't tell her that she's not doing it herself. She's always at training. She's been ill for about 3 months and she's been at every game, every training session. You know, and she's just that person that everybody would look to had they, you know, even outside of football. If your day's going badly or, you know, you've got something that you need to get off your chest, Hattie's the first person that springs to mind to run to and have a little cry or get something off your chest.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is
beautiful. Oh, this is awesome, guys. This is awesome. All right, Shimmy, hit him with the next one.
Sure. So we are coming up on Thanksgiving here in the United States, big holiday. Did you experience it at all while you were in the USA, Hattie?
Yes, I did. Thanksgiving. Some of the best food I've ever eaten has been at family Thanksgiving dinners, honestly.
Wow.
Yes, yeah. There you go.
The sweet potato pie with the marshmallows on top. Oh, you can't beat that, can you?
Yeah. You had basically a Southern Thanksgiving, which is like a very decadent, like rich meal. So,
The marshmallow on top thing, though, I got to say. So I had a girlfriend. She was from Greece. I used to live in Greece. And when we came back together, and she had her first Thanksgiving and she was just like why are you putting marshmallows on this stuff? This does makes no sense. So I'm glad you appreciated it. Other Europeans do not.
It doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense until you try it, and then you try it and you're like, oh my god, why do we not do this?
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
there's so much good Thanksgiving food. And it's just such a nice, it has nice meaning obviously behind it. We always did Friendsgiving too within my team, and that was always nice because it gives you a chance to actually like, you know what, I'm thankful for you, and I'm thankful for Forest Green, I'm thankful for this team if we're talking about Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's, I love this that's team. Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Man, I don't even know if I have to ask the rest of the question. That was just so well put right there.
let's ask your player one.
Okay, sure, the player one. So I want to know, just like Thanksgiving leftovers are so crucial, who is the unsung playmaker on the team who feeds everybody?
What do you think, Char? We have a few. We have a few players that kind of go under the radar, but that make a big influence.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think the way we play as a team, we rely on getting the ball out wide as quickly as possible, because we've got pace on the wings, and the delivery is always perfect from those girls. So, you know, credit to them. So if we're talking about creating chances in terms of creating plays, then definitely I'd say our wingers. So people like Ella and Ninka, Zoe as well, Dim Shady puts a ball in when she needs to, and they just never miss. They're always there. So if we get the ball out to them, we know that the ball's going to end up in the box and we've got a goal scoring opportunity coming.
How many goals have we scored from wide? Yeah, so many balls we've had that have gone out wide. They've done their thing. Zoe's gone around about four players. Ninka's done the same. Yeah. Ella's done a few 1-2s. Like, and then the ball's come into the box and we've finished on, you know, we utilize those chances so much.
That's awesome. Yeah, so they're unsung no more. Unsung no more, right?
That's right. How they've been sung.
We appreciate you.
I think it was you, Hattie, the cross in. I can't remember what game it was, but whatever. It was a beautiful cross in. You volleyed it home. Was that? I don't remember what game that was, but it was beautiful. Anyway,
that was
whatever that was.
Yeah,
that was
FA Cup. Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, that was awesome. Anyway, all right. So moving on, we got. Should we do one more, Sham? Let's do one more, because Sean and I are going to be super late for work, but that's okay. So worth it. All right, here we go. Last one. Who is the most gloss gal? This is kind of Charlie themed, but who's the most gloss gal on the team? And what does that even mean, to be a gloss gal? We made that term up, but Gloucestershire, baby. Who is the heart of Gloucestershire?
You get to define it, Charlie.
I suppose there's many situations and people I could add this to. I think Beck Pan, the goalkeeper, if you ever have her on, the minute she opens her mouth, you'll understand why she's a gloss girl, because her accent is just pure West Country, which Gloucestershire, she just sounds, she's a very intelligent teacher and very smart woman, and is one of the most mature first people on the team in terms of having a big girl job and having a mortgage and a, you know, and a mission. But yeah, when she talks, you just think, oh my goodness, you're a Gloucestershire girl.
And, let's go.
Beckpan.
Yes, Pamela.
Yes, Pamela.
Let's go. So I'm actually sorry. I saw you have one more. Ask this one, because I think it's a good one. And then we'll get out of here. We'll see who's the personality of the team. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's do it. So, you know, like Charlie had mentioned, you guys have the discipline. You've chosen to wake up early on Sundays and hit the team bus. And Charlie, I know that you've played at the Youth World Cup in 2016 in Sweden. So who on the team bus loves a captive audience and kind of raises the mood of everybody, maybe pre-match or post-match? Who's giving you away day Stockholm syndrome?
There it is. There's the tie-in to Sweden.
Hattie, you can take this one.
Well, I think it was aimed at you, Char. You crack on. I'm trying to think.
Either one can answer.
All of us are very... I think it just... Things like in the changing rooms, there's a performance every away game, every home game. Come on. People have got their little songs that, when we put it on, it's aimed at them. I'm a sucker for a Jolene. Dolly Parton.
Oh, let's go.
Yes.
Dolly Parton. Tennessee, Dolly. Shout out to Hattie.
The goat, yeah.
Dolly's so the goat.
Roped into doing that on the bus and in the changing rooms. Dim Shady is our, you know, our rapper of the team.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Could bust out a few bars, let me tell you.
She can spit them.
Yeah, she's...
Let's go, Dim Shady.
Quite easily. So, Eminem is her bag. So any Eminem song, we've got microphones that will pass around versus It All Goes On. It's a really social environment for everybody.
That's awesome. It sounds like such a great atmosphere, you know.
Yeah. A lot easier to resist the old lion. Have yourself a lion. It's easy to resist it when you got Dim Shady dropping bars. By the way, that just makes the nickname so much better. I'm like so impressed by that nickname. That's like one of the best ones I've ever heard. Anyway, we got to get out of here. Sean and I are going to be so late to work, but it doesn't matter.
Totally
this was
worth
so
it.
Worth
yeah,
it.
It's a lot of fun. So much fun, guys.
Yeah, we planned to talk for like 30 minutes and we're now at an hour and 15. It was just so, you two were brilliant. Like, it was so awesome talking to you. Man, awesome, awesome stuff. So much, like, anyway, people are going to love this episode, I think, because you two were just so brilliant. We really, really, really appreciate you coming on, giving up your time for us. This was awesome.
Schooling us on, you know, just how great the FGR Women's Squad is, what a spirit there is within the squad, and why we need to go out and support you.
Yes, absolutely. And I really hope this raises support. Go out, support our women's squad just as you support the men's squad. They are doing outstanding work on the pitch, have outstanding perspectives off the pitch. Charlie, Hattie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate
that. That was a lot of fun. Oh, cheers. Yeah, same. Cheers.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Oh, man.
Charlie Rollins, the titan of the team, the heart and soul, FGR, proper FGR, Charlie Rollins.
Yeah, add two more goats to the conversation. We have a team full on the men's squad of goats. Add two more to the conversation. Just awesome human beings, man.
Oh, man, they were so cool, so fun, so funny, so wise. Oh, my goodness. When we asked them about, like, what life lessons they've learned from football, like, incredible. Like, so mature. More mature than
you
I was at
it.
That age, and more mature than I am now.
Yeah, absolutely. And more mature than we are right now. But we were not even approximating that at the age of like 20, in our early 20s, right? So, man, just kudos to them. What a great combo.
Yeah, so fun meeting them, man. I hope we can meet them in person when we get over there. Well, a little sneak preview. We talked to Chris Hicks. We'll have him on the next pod. He invited us to train with the women's team, Sham. We got to do it. They're going to, anyway, we'll do it. We'll get some embarrassing video of that.
Yeah. It might be considered a charity event for the women's squad. two troubled men. Look, we invited them over and showed them a decent time of training.
He's going to put both of us in goal at the same time. And if you think the FGR women's team is scoring goals now, just wait until Sham and I are in goal.
Yeah.
It's going to be the ultimate confidence booster for these women. Anyway, moving on. Let's get to our boy, Mad Max Alderson, the gas head himself. Very gassy. You know what it always reminds me of? Remember Dumb and Dumber? Mm-hmm. When there's that scene when he's like, gas man. How do they know I got gas? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the hitman. The gas hitman, right? Yeah.
The hitman. Yeah. The hitman's like, gas man. How do they know I got gas? Yeah. It's great movie. Anyway, all right, let's move on to Max from the Gas Cast podcast. Let's talk all about Bristol Rovers. Let's get us ready for Saturday, Bristol Rovers. Let's do it. Boom. We welcome to the pod the Gas Man, Mad Max Alderson from the Gas Cast, a Bristol Rovers podcast community blog. I don't know what else you do. You wear a lot of hats. Let's get gassy, baby. Welcome to the pod, Max.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. Really appreciate you you inviting me on the podcast.
Well, we thank you for giving up your time to talk to two dumb Americans like us. Educate us on the gas, on Bristol Rovers, and get us ready for the match on Saturday. We are so excited for this match. Actually, this is a huge, huge week in FGR because Tuesday we have the return of Mark Cooper, our old gaffer against Barrow. And then Saturday we got the return of Aaron Collins and a little local rival in Bristol Rovers. But first up, important question, who on the team has the most gas? Who do you think, like, who's a guy who looks like he farts a lot?
You have never been asked a question like that before, but I would probably I'm trying to think like who's probably going to be Brett Pittman, our striker, because he's a little on the, we call him the pork pie Pele, because he's got a few pounds on him. But he has got, the goal scoring chops.
Oh, let's go. Brett the Pittman Hart, aka the, what do you call him?
Yeah, we call him Brett the Hitman Pittman.
Oh, I love it. Brett the Hitman Pittman. Brett the Pittman Hart. I love it.
The pork pie Pele.
The pork pie Pele. I love this. He doesn't, he's injured though, right?
Yeah, it's a strange one because he's got this injury where he needs to get injured to fix the injury, apparently, or something. It's something to do with the Achilles where it's irritating him, but he needs to actually tear it for it to heal properly. So we're not really sure where he stands with it because the management team are quite cagey with the status of the injury. But yeah, he's been out of the team for a little bit. He was back on the bench against Tranmere on the weekend. So hopefully we'll see him back soon because we've been playing strikerless without a striker for like five league games now.
And yeah, that's what I was going to say. You guys have, yeah, he's your striker and he's been out for a long time. We're gonna talk about the players in a second. But yeah, I think you guys have had 33 goals from 17 different scores. So maybe you don't need a striker. But we'll get into that in a second. Before we get into the match and everything. First thing we want to know is Gas. What is this name? We love it. Phenomenal nickname. On Saturday, we just played against Hartlepool. Another one we just learned about, the Monkey Hangers.
Yes.
Now we got the Gas. One. Oh yeah, we just learned. We Wikipedia incredible. Anyway, love these nicknames. Nicknames with character. That's what you love to see. Screw the Bluebirds and the whatever the Red Devil. Like these are real nicknames. So where does Gas come from?
Well, our traditional historical nickname is the Pirates, which is why we've got also the pirate cool on the badge. Mm-hmm. But we, yes. when Rovers played in Eastville in Bristol, the stadium, Eastville Stadium, it was an old Greyhound racing track with a football pitch in the middle, and behind the stadium was the big gas works, so like the big refineries, you used to be able to smell like. So opposition players would say that the Rovers players, the fumes from the gasworks would almost fire them up. Bristol City fans at the time would try and use it as a derogatory term by calling us gas heads, by saying we were all a bit crazy in the head because we were just inhaling the fumes all the time. But it kind of turned into a term of endearment, which we kind of adopted ourselves and started calling ourselves gas heads. And then the Rovers team, we called them the Gas, and it kind of grew from there really over the decades.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. It's a brilliant story, and I love taking something that other people are like using as like a derogatory term and like owning it.
Yeah.
That's right. That's kind of what we try to do. I mean, well, Sham and I are vegans, so we don't think that vegan is a pejorative, but a lot of of opposing teams, like, that's the big joke.
In football culture, vegan isn't all that cool.
That's true. So yeah, we try to own that. We try to be like the vegan Rovers and kind of own everybody, everyone making fun of us for being vegan. But anyway, we've heard like Bristol's a really cool little town. So, and actually, Sean and I are going to be there. We're going to come in April where we actually are going to go to our first ever FGR away game at Bristol Rovers.
Cannot amazing. Wait.
At the Mem. But we've heard really, really
we're ready
good
to inhale those
Bristol
fumes.
That's right.
We're going to go to Eastville first and then the new ground.
Yeah, well, if you go to Eastville now, there's just a big IKEA there, so there's no more stadium there anymore. So you'll just be looking for furniture instead.
Right, well, and we can't cheer on the meatballs, so okay, maybe we can't do it.
That's true. Although I have heard that they do vegan meatballs now at IKEA.
Let's go.
You could try them out for sure.
Let's go.
The first and only.
So what's the vibe like in Bristol? We've heard it's a cool little spot. We've heard it's a cool little town. We cannot wait for our first little away day in Bristol. But what give us a sense of the Bristol vibe?
Yeah, it's very cool. It's a harbor city, so it's got a big port and there's lots of like waterfront venues. Like if you're actually in the center, where Rovers are based in Horfield, it's a little bit out north of the center, but you have got what's called Gloucester Road, which goes from the city centre. It's a long road that goes all the way up to the Rovers Stadium, and there's probably about 20 to 30 pubs all along there, so it's famous for doing the Gloucester Road pub crawl. But yeah, as a city, it's great. I mean, I've lived here or just outside the city my whole life, and it's just, it's got everything you want, really. It's really modern, multicultural, so many different restaurants and pubs and bars and clubs. It's a very modern city, and it's become a little bit gentrified in recent years. You know, lots of Londoners commute here because it's become very much a tech hub in terms of industry and jobs. And I myself work in the IT sector as well, so I work right in the center of the city, and it is very modern. But it's just a really good city, some really great people I've met over the years in Bristol of all different walks of life, and it's just a great place to be, to be honest. It's fantastic place to have a football club based, and there's no shortage of pubs and boozers to go to before the game.
Let's
gas
go.
Yourself up however you need, you know. That's what
right.
I wanted to hear.
We're gonna gas ourselves up. Yeah, go ahead.
I had a quick question, because we have sort of this four screen connection, and also, you know, we're giving away our age because we're elder millennials, but I know I was a big Massive Attack fan, you know, growing up as a kid, and, you know, it's got that artistic scene. So is Massive Attack considered like oldies now in Bristol?
Or is
Robert El Naya and those guys still like...
Little four screen connection there too.
The He's
allegedly,
is artistic director.
Allegedly our artistic director, but I don't know what that means.
Yeah, if you asked probably the young adults, they probably would say that that's kind of an older generation thing these days, Massive Attack. Yeah. But, you know, I grew up with Massive Attack as well, and they have done a few gigs. They did a gig recently in Bristol, and, you know, it's kind of like a homecoming show. And yeah, they're kind of like the fabled sons of Bristol. But it does make me feel my age when you talk about Massive Attack and people are like, hey, younger lads are like,
yeah,
they?
It's like, yeah, well, you have cholesterol problems, what are you talking about?
Oh man, but all right, so let's move on here. But I cannot wait to do, Sean, we got to do the Gloucester Road pub crawl. All right,
yeah,
Sean,
so
and I are doing
in the city center. Just make your way up Gloucester Road, keep following it up, you'll get straight to the stadium, but there's no shortage of pubs on the way up. So,
oh, beautiful. Okay. Shimmy, we're doing that. We're doing that when we get there in April. So what is the Bristol Rovers identity? Like, what's the culture of this club, and why are you better than Bristol City?
Ooh, big question. It's traditionally, the culture is very family orientated, I suppose, is how the club would like to put it. But I think from a fan base, it's more of a loyalty kind of thing. For Rovers, we've been through so many ups and downs over the decades, even before I was born, going all the way up to the heights of the second division, which is now the Championship, and more recently down into the National League, where we met yourselves about 5-6 years ago. So we've been up and down, and throughout it, I think most Rovers fans would say that the core identity of the club is just the backing of the fans, no matter where we are. I think we, until last weekend, we held the conference record for record crowd, until Notts County broke it last weekend, I believe. But in just the support the club gets, we've been to Wembley Stadium for about 3 or 4 times, and each time we've taken 30,000-40,000 there. And it's just, the potential of the club is huge, and the backing is always there. It's just been a club that's never been able to kick on as it needs to the Championship. It's always kind of staggered between League Two and League One, and I think the core identity of the club is just the support, and to keep believing and keep pushing towards where we all want to be, which is ultimately in the Championship, where Bristol City are, where we want to be playing them twice a season in the league, and have these great matches that we used to have in the 90s and the 80s, the Bristol Derby. The last time we played them was nearly 10 years ago now, in a cup. You know, it's what every Rovers fan wants, is to be up there and to be battling with your rivals every season, and just trying to give a good account of yourselves. And for me, the Championship is the best league in the country, even more than the Premier League. I think it's so competitive, and it's without all the, obviously there's money there now, but it's without the, you know, the cameras and the flashy multi-million pound players and clubs. And for me, it's where I would aspire Rovers to be, and I think that's where we ultimately want to be. But it's a long way to go for us to get there at the moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think FGR, you know, we have similar aspirations. Our goal is also Championship. And I agree with you. I've been watching the Championship for a while as a Fulham fan. And it's so much fun to watch. It's so competitive. And ever since Sean and I started following Forest Green too, man, League Two is unbelievable as well. Like, the you don't get that kind of competition, nothing like it in the Premier League. And also just the community, the every, you know, it feels like a family, a football family here. You really feel like the club cares about you, and they're doing, you know, they're doing the right things. Not just you know, whatever's good for money, whatever's good for growing the bottom line, which is really the case in the Premier League a lot of times. Anyway, off of that little soapbox, Maya Jama is a gas head too, right?
Supposedly so, although she very rarely shows her colours. I mean, she was born in Bristol and her parents are Bristol Rovers fans, I believe. Although, she seems to wear a few different football shirts in different YouTube videos. Sometimes West Ham, sometimes Manchester United, on the rare occasion Bristol Rovers. But allegedly so.
I love it.
Well, I think Man United understands clicks. So, you know, clicks respects clicks, I guess, is the connection there.
Yeah. Some American connection too with Bristol Rovers. Your club song "Goodnight Irene," written by American blues legend Led Belly. Your goalkeeper James Belshaw actually played college soccer here in the States, in the US of A, at Duke, and is allegedly friends with a fellow former Duke Blue Devil NBA player Mason Plumlee. So a little American connection there. But let's talk about the season a little bit. You're 14th in the table right now at the time of this recording, which I think you're going to tell us in a bit, but I feel like that's probably got to be a little disappointing when you consider what a big club Bristol Rovers are. But you're finding some good form recently. Last three league games, you beat feisty Harrogate Town on the road. You beat a very good Northampton Town, and you only had 10 men for the last 35 minutes of that one. You drew against Tranmere, which is always tough, and you scored two goals against the best defense in the league, and you don't even have a striker. And then, of course, you know, that massive FA Cup victory against Oxford United last week. So maybe a little tough start, but it seems like things might be looking up for you guys. How are you feeling right now, Max?
Yeah, very positive. If we'd done this interview maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I would have been probably a bit doom and gloom. When we were down in 16th, 17th, it was hard to see the direction we were going in this season. Obviously, it's always difficult after a relegation. We completely rebuilt the team with Joey Barton having, you know, an entire summer to build a club in his image and his philosophy and how he wanted to play. And with 12 games gone, it was very difficult to see what the game plan was, what that philosophy was. And for someone who talks the talk so well, it was starting to jar a little bit, and we were thinking, you know, he's had an entire window to bring in his players. He told us after relegation, my team won't be like last season, my team will be a team you're proud of, and it just wasn't the case about 3 weeks ago. But I'm not quite sure what happened, but I think pretty much ever since Brett Pittman got injured and we've been without a striker, we seem to be playing a lot better. I don't know if something's just clicked in the training ground or within the group, but they just seem a lot more united. There's a lot more fight in them, and you see the amount of comeback wins we've had lately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hanging on with 10 men for 35 minutes against Northampton. There's definitely a lot more spirit in the camp, and he's starting Joey Barton to turn the ship around. And I'm actually able to say quite happily for the first time this season that I believe in this group, and I actually believe in what the manager's trying to do now. So I am feeling a little bit positive now. I was hoping we would have 2-0 up at home against Tranmere. I was hoping we would get another 3 points, go to Salford on Tuesday, who aren't in such great form, get another win there, and then we'd be going into this game against Forest Green with some real momentum. But knowing Rovers, we're going to have to do it the hard way, it seems. But on the whole, largely positive at the minute.
That's nice. Good to hear. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Joey Barton. He's a very divisive manager in this league. What do you make of him?
On a personality front, and I don't like the appointment, and I don't like the manager. He's got two court cases hanging over his head currently.
Sure,
right. One for an altercation with former Barnsley manager Daniel Stendel, and a more recent one where he has allegedly hit his wife, and according to reports in the Daily Mail, I believe, kicked her in the head when she was on the floor at a party, which is just, if true, obviously it's alleged, and until the court case happens and that verdict goes through, wouldn't want to pass any judgment. But when you have two court cases hanging over your head, it makes it very difficult to vocally back a manager, because, you know, if this then turns out to be guilty and on one or both cases, you know, the club looks very bad for backing someone with that kind of personality and those crimes over their head. And as fans, I guess a lot of us feel the same. I was pretty much barting out until about 3 weeks ago because of the reasons I mentioned and us just having no direction and him not following through on the promises he made. Now he's starting to turn it around. I do have a little bit more appreciation for his managerial chops. I guess that a lot of the reservations I still have are obviously about these things in his personal life because they do directly affect the club and how we appear in the public image. I think he definitely tries to build a relationship with the fans. He's very passionate, which a lot of core fans seem to relate to. They like passion in a manager. They don't like, I think a lot of fans don't like just the cliches, the rolling out the managerial handbook of the same thing said after the same defeats. You kind of want a manager who gets the identity of the club, gets the passion of the fan base and kind of rallies behind you and gets you motivated as a fan to go to games when results maybe aren't so good. And I think Barton does do that, and he does kind of, particularly with the more passionate fans who are maybe able to overlook his personal life, he definitely riles them up. And if he didn't have these overhanging court cases, I would probably be very supportive of him because I do like that side of a manager who can motivate people with words. And I have watched clips of him when he was at Fleetwood Town and the team talks he was giving the players, and he is like a leader of men. He is rallying in his words, and he's a very good wordsmith. And we did an interview, the podcast, with the current kit man at the club, and he was saying that the team talks that Barton gives are the best he's ever heard in 20 years at the club. And when you hear stuff like that, you want to get behind a manager, but it's very difficult with Joey Barton because, as you said, obviously a lot of players do have things in their past lives, but for Joey Barton it's the present. This is right now, and we Good could point, be looking yeah. at potentially a manager who's going to prison in the next 3-4 months, which is just never, is hard to fathom in modern football, really.
It makes you worry yeah. for your club, right? Because even if he's doing great things, then, yeah. you know, what's the uncertainty that brings?
Of course, yeah, massive uncertainty. And I guess the main disappointment was when these allegations came out about the party and the incident with his wife. The club kind of doubled down on it rather than maybe suspend him until the court case. You know, they just let him build an entire squad. The season was maybe 2 games in. And instead of doing what I think would have been the right thing, which would have been to suspend him and not associate yourselves with that decision, instead the club backed him almost in saying, well, we'll just wait and see what happens, which, as I've said before, you can end up with pie in your face if it goes badly because you've backed a criminal in that case. So yeah, it does add a lot of uncertainty, and the club have doubled down on it, which is a big gamble, and it's kind of caused a bit of disrepair between the club and the fans at the minute. Things are starting to maybe head in the right direction. We've just appointed a new CEO, a young director at the club called Tom Gorringe, who was brought in as a marketing director. He's been brilliant since coming to the club in modernising a lot of the aspects which were maybe stuck in the 80s and 90s. And he's been a welcome appointment as the new CEO of the club. So maybe some good movement in that direction, but largely on the whole, until the managerial situation resolves itself, there is going to be a lot of uncertainty at the club, Sean.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's get on to some of the players here now. We just talked about Joey Barton leading this group, but let's talk about some of the members of this team that you, as you said, have really, you know, brought it on and playing like Bristol Rovers football, like you've come to expect in terms of, like, you know, playing 90 minutes, having a fight, having a real togetherness. We know, as we already mentioned, Brett the Pitman Hart, aka Brett the Pitman, aka the Pork Belly Pele. I love this. He's injured, but it doesn't matter. You're scoring goals. You got attacking midfielder Ant-Man Anthony Evans beasting up front. Maybe your best player so far. You got Crystal Palace loanee Sean Spence, who Joey Barton says is the best finisher on the team. He's finally getting some minutes. You got our old boy, the snake, the betrayer, Judas. Paul, wait, what's the dude's name?
Benedict Arnold.
Paul Revere. Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold. As a razzmatazza, Collins. Just kidding, by the way, with all that stuff. Tell us a quick bit about some of the players who are going to make the gas tough for us to beat on Saturday.
Yeah, well, we play strikerless at the minute, and we've scored more goals without a striker than we have with a striker. And I think that is, like you say, down to the quality of the attacking midfielders. We play a 3-4-3 system, or usually a 3-4-1-2. The front two in this system, or the front three, is usually it's usually Sam Nicholson and Anthony Evans who usually lead the line for us. Sam Nicholson obviously played in the United States for Colorado Rapids. Came back to another American link. He's a young Scottish winger slash attacker midfielder who's now playing up front for us. And he's signed for the club in League One last season. He was fantastic. He probably would have moved to another League One club had he not been injured so much. And he's doing very well at League Two level. He's linking up well with Anthony Evans, who is a signing that maybe went under the radar for a lot of people. A bit of an underwhelming one on paper. He'd never really done it before at Crewe Alexandra. But for us, he's been nothing short of sensational, far too good for the league. And maybe we might be regretting only signing him on a one-year deal come June, July, because he's a player we definitely want to keep a hold of. We've got some really good wing-backs at the club. Josh Grant, who is traditionally a centre-back, played at Chelsea as a youngster at left wing-back, and he's kind of suggested to Barton that he'd be tried out there. And since he's played left wing-back, he's been fantastic for us. Scored 2 goals in 2 games at home, and he's just looking really, really dangerous on that left flank. On the right, we've got Harry Anderson. He's a very tricky, pacey winger who's been converted to a right wing back, having to do a bit more defensive duty, but is offering us a lot of attacking threat. And I think those two just down the flanks and then feeding balls into Evans and Nicholson is causing a lot of problems. And then we just have a really tenacious midfield. Glenn Whelan, who's obviously got a lot of Premier League experience with Stoke City and Burnley, obviously dropped down the leagues in recent years. He's been a class above, I think, since signing for us. And then in front of him, Sam Finley, our box-to-box midfielder, has netted a few goals in recent games and has been... It just feels really balanced now, and I think that's been the problem until now, when we maybe had Brett Pittman up front. We were maybe playing longer balls up to him, more direct play, and he's just not that kind of striker. He may look big, he may be the pork pie pellet, as I've discussed, but he's a poacher. He is a fox in the box, and he's not a hold-up play striker. And I think maybe... especially when you're being pressed by a high press, centre-backs and wing-backs tend to try and look for that long diagonal up to the centre-forward. And when there's no centre-forward there now, I think maybe we've looked to play shorter, try and build the play through the midfield a bit more. And there is so much balance there now. And having the players like Aaron Collins and Sean Spence on the bench to kind of come on and impact and without changing that system is really important, I think, because... off the bench, those two have been fantastic in recent games and scored some goals as well since that Oxford replay.
Yeah, I think Sean Spence score 2 late goals?
Yes.
And Aaron Collins had that one crazy goal.
Right.
Yeah, his one and only goal for us so far.
Yeah.
Collins, but what a way to open his account.
Yeah, yeah. I want to ask you about Collins in 1 second, but for some reason, I also think that Alfie Kilgore, this might not be true. It's probably not true, as most things we say on this pod. But for some reason, I think he's the son of an FGR legend, Mike Kilgore. That's probably not true, but I don't know why. I feel like I've heard that, or I don't know. Anyway, someone out there tells him that's true.
I couldn't tell you, I don't think. I think his...
No idea if that's true. I don't know why I think it's true.
Kilgore is anyway, like Smith over there.
There we go.
Everyone's
there. We go. So I want to talk to you quickly about... We're going to wrap this up in just a minute, but I want to ask about Aaron Collins, our old boy. So from his time at Forest Green Rovers, kind of what we gathered watching him is like he plays very hard. 90 minutes, you're going to get everything out of him, which you love to see. He's got some crazy talent on the ball. But for us, he always kind of seemed to lack that kind of finishing touch. And he also kind of fell out of a favor with the FGR fans a little bit, especially towards the end. So I wonder, how has his time at Bristol Rovers been so far?
Pretty underwhelming, if I'm honest. When he signed, I was quite excited about the signing because he had 9 goals and 11 assists, which is 20 goal contributions, something we really, really needed in the side. He really has had a dry spell since signing. He's had a couple of maybe 3 one-on-one chances with the goalkeeper he's missed. Probably if that first one goes in, he scores all 3. But, with strikers, the longer they go without a goal, sometimes it does play on their mind.
Sure.
I've been a little bit underwhelmed. He did start probably a fair few games in the first 10 games. Since then, he's kind of fallen out of favour a little bit just because obviously he's not scoring. He's not the most physical, so he doesn't really, when you're struggling for an outlet, he's not really that kind of guy. In the new system we're playing, strikerless, he kind of if you kind of view him as an attacking midfielder as opposed to a striker, he's doing quite well in that regard, linking up the play and playing some nice balls. But yeah, on the whole, I think I'm a little disappointed he's not scored more. I was kind of hoping he'd be our main man. He's got the number 10 shirt, and with his record last season, I was hoping we'd be the one to kick him on. I think looking back, the last striker we signed from Forest Green was Matty Saylor, and we turned him from an 11 goal striker at Forest Green into a 28 goal striker for us. So wow. I was kind of hoping that we'd do similar. They kind of have similar build, similar style of striker, but yeah, I mean, he's still got a lot to give. I'm not giving up on him for sure. And in recent games, he's been very good for us. So hopefully he can kick on now. But yeah, he's been a bit of a quiet signing, I think.
Yeah, so Shab and I are idiots when it comes to understanding anything about football. But based on, you know, our watching, our viewing of the game, we always, you know, we kind of always thought like Aaron Collins, you're not a, don't be a striker. That's not you. You can't. He's like, it sounds like he's having the same issues that he had with us. Yeah. He can't finish, but he does. He is able to create at times. And so yeah, just change your role. Move it into more like just purely attacking midfielder. Don't shoot. Pass the ball. But anyway, so let's wrap this up here. What do we need to do as Forest Green Rovers? What do we need to do to win the game on Saturday?
Well, you need to ask questions of our defense, which seems to be the problem for us at the minute. We've had some great results in recent weeks, but we have conceded a lot of goals as well. You know, conceded 3 against Oxford, 2 in the first leg against Oxford, 2 against Tranmere, 1 against Northampton. So we are very leaky at the back at the minute. And with the quality that Forest Green have up front, I think scoring goals is probably not going to be too much of an issue. It's just probably going to be a question of how many goals do you score.
So with that, let's hear your prediction. What's your prediction for Saturday?
I'm going to say 2-1 to Forest Green. I just think that, you know, top of the league, Forest Green are going strong. Maybe the form is wavering a little bit. I've seen a lot of draws in between wins in recent weeks for Forest Green. Yeah. Exeter are kind of catching up. They're on a good streak at the minute. So I don't know. I kind of back a team top of the league at home to solidify their position. Like I said, our defence probably our Achilles heel at the minute. If we were a bit more solid with the goals we're scoring, we would be climbing the table a lot more, but I don't think that's quite there yet. So, you know, I really like Ibu Adams. I think he's a fantastic player. He can definitely ask questions and unlock our defence, I think, with some good passing, and that's probably where I would look to maybe shut the game down, is probably by isolating him. But the qualities he has, he's definitely a player I'm worrying about, and I think probably at home Forest Green are going to have too much for us. So I'm gonna say 2-1 to Forest Green.
Well, Max, I hope you're right. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Appreciate it that it pained you to say that. We can tell people
guys
don't see this, but you know, it was an honest, sober analysis, but we can tell it pained you a little bit. So
Well, Max, man, I really, really, really appreciate this. Max Alderson from the Gas Cast Podcast. Man, best of luck this season. Worst of luck on Saturday, but best of luck the rest of the season, my friend. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for hanging out with us. And we will see you. Hopefully we'll see you on the Gloucester Road Bar Pub Crawl.
Definitely.
In April.
Drop me a tweet and we'll get you up Gloucester Road for a beer. It'll be fantastic.
Let's go.
Hey,
let's
nice. Go. And then 22 after that.
Yes.
On the way up. So.
Love it. Love it. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Max.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Max was amazing. Max was amazing.
Yeah, we learned so much. And Bristol, man, seems like where it's at. We got to take that trip up. They're looking for our first jaunt up there, our first FGR away day, right?
Yeah, cool city. Our boy Flaggers told us that there's a lot of great vegan spots out there. Also, Jade, who had a baby, well, not just, I guess about a month ago now. Shout out to Jade. Big congratulations. FGR chef had her baby. But anyway, she also told us Bristol is loaded with good vegan spots, so cannot wait for that away day in Bristol, baby. Anyway, let's get to Statman. Then we'll talk about Barrow, which is Tuesday, and then we'll get out of here, Shimmy. Here we go. Statman hits with a stat. Let's have a little stat chat. A little chat of the stat. Here we go.
I'm a scat.
Statman. We are back with our friend Statman, Chris Latham, who just returned from the FGR women's team. GFA Cup match against, what was it? Pucklesworth? Puckleberry? Puckle Church? Pickle Church?
Yeah.
What is it?
Puckle Church.
Puckle Church. What a name.
Named after the town, that's, I imagine.
Yeah, that is the name of the town. It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
I'm wondering what the origin of that name is.
It's Wait, you've heard weird. Of Puckle Church, Shimmy?
I've not, no, but I'm intrigued. Very
Puckle
intrigued.
Church. Yeah, so, well, I'm so intrigued as well. It's in Gloucestershire because it's, of course, the GFA, which is the Gloucestershire FA Cup. It looks like it's right outside of Bristol. Right outside of Bristol.
But it's a horrible pitch. It's like lengthways, it's on a slope, and sideways, it's on a slope. So it's bumpy. It's a tough pitch to play on, I think.
I love it. The magic of lower league football. And yeah, I guess looking it up on a map here, it looks like not too far from maybe where you grew up, because you said you grew up outside of Yate, or as Lewis Thomas says, Yate. I don't know how he said it, but we could not understand what he was saying when he said he played for Yate Town. Anyway, nice. So you want to give us your stat first or give us the quick recap?
Oh, I don't mind.
Hit us with the stat first and then we'll hear the recap. Here we go.
Here for the stats. Forest Green Rovers men. Most headed goals in League Two this season. And I liked
that. Hey! Wow. Oh, sorry?
I liked that because it just sort of represents this like movement, this change. Because I think a couple of years ago, if you'd said we'd score lots of headers, people would probably laugh and go, nah. Because we put it in the mixer, as the old cliches go, in the danger zone. In the, what is it, the danger channel? I can't remember what they are now. I should learn my football cliches better. But nine headed goals this season, which is the most of any team in League Two, which I just think represents this sort of slightly more direct, but equally as enjoyable to watch, if not more, than what we've seen before.
Yeah, the GMT goal yesterday was phenomenal, like to get us off the mark, right?
Yeah, what a player he is, by the way. I like him.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, he was... Well, sadly, I didn't get to see it. Sean did, but I watched the highlights, and that goal was fantastic. Like, beautiful header. Right in the top. Oh, perfect. Perfect. That's interesting, too, because, you know, I don't know, you don't think of us as being a very big, like, tall team. We have Sweens, of course, but Sweens has been out for a while, and I don't think he's scored. Yeah, he hasn't scored any
and
goals.
Sweens may also just be three youth players in one jersey stacked up on top of one another. We can't be sure.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, isn't it? My mind's eye, or whatever they call it, when I think of headers, it probably, like, there's Jammer, who's obviously really good in the air, but I also think of Matty Stevens, sort of like on a, you know, like in the right place at the right time on a rebound or a cross-ball scramble, just nodding it in.
Yes.
Good. Interestingly, Forest Green also 13 goals from right foot, 7 from left, and then 1 from other. So who scored with another part of their body?
Go ahead, Sean. There's some jokes there.
We're family pod. Podcast, as we're fond of saying. So we'll leave it
keep
at
it
that.
Clean.
Yeah,
keep
we'll
it clean. Keep it clean. Oh, that's interesting, though. That is interesting. I love it.
Must be a patella goal, one of those fabulous kind of patella strikes.
There we go. I love it. So that's fascinating. All right. So what about, do you have a stat for the women's team as well?
Not officially, but like the team they played today haven't conceded in their league campaign yet. So obviously a tough place to go. That as a stat is quite frightening when you're about to play them, I guess.
That is. So you just got back from Puckle Church. Puckle Church, what a name. What happened in that match, Chris Latham? And did you go with your daughters?
No, I went on my own in the end today. It's cold today. So
it's too cold.
Like I said I'd go. And it's quite a nice way to go and spend an afternoon just out in the cold.
Yeah.
Very cold feet. Just watching a game of football on an exposed field.
It's a very British sentiment. Exactly. What a way to spend a Sunday, just outside in the cold.
It was good, though. It was good. Forest Green went 2 up in the first half. They scored just before halftime to make it 2-1. And then they got a penalty, sort of like, towards the end of the game to make it 2-2, which was a bit unfortunate because I don't want to name the players because they changed into their away kits. They got different numbers on. I'm pretty sure who gave away the penalty. Really unlucky for her because just before that she'd made an incredible sliding tackle in the box as well. So I hope she doesn't feel too bad about herself, like in a way that is kind of unlucky. So we went 2-0, then we got to full time, stood on the side of the pitch with some of the parents and other people that have turned up. We're all trying to work out, does it go to extra time and then penalties because it's the cup? Then it dawned on us that it's getting really dark. There's no lights.
Oh!
some guys come out on a little tractor to pack away the goals. But you can't do it. There's penalties. And then, unfortunately, one on penalties. But it was a tough game. It's, like I said earlier, it's sort of like the pitch is on a slope, both lengthways and sideways. And it's quite bobbly. It's quite hard to play. Plus, Hucklechurch, they're quite fit and quite strong and don't give you much time on the ball, so it's kind of hard to play. And although there are a couple of leagues below Forest Green in the sort of pyramid, they, like someone there did say they've signed some players from a higher level. So it's a tough game. I think it's one of those, if you came away, well, we did come away with a draw. If it was in the league, it's the kind of game that's quite hard. You go, actually, that's a good away point.
Yeah. Oh, it stinks that came down the penalties, you know, like that when we played so well. But
it's going to be heartbreaking for one side.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now we can focus on the league, though. And yeah, hey,
exactly.
At least our name isn't Pucklechurch.
Yeah, or as they like to abbreviate it there to Puckle. Come on, Puckle.
I love it.
A great name for a pet, you know.
Yeah. It's down towards Bristol, so it's like a very Bristolian sort of, come on, Puckle. I like that. I can joke about it because I work in Bristol. So.
Sure.
And you're from that area too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And people take the mick out of my accent all the time. So.
Oh, there you go. And we can joke about it because we're Americans. And
that's right.
For 200-plus years, that's just how it's been. Yeah.
You all sound the same to me, though, Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
I cannot tell your accent away from anyone else's over there.
Wow.
And I did look this up because I should encourage people to go along to these games. Four of them is when there is no home men's game on the same weekend.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect.
The next home game, 5th of December, 2021, against Sherburn Town, who before this weekend are third in the league. No game at all for the men. So come on down and watch FGR women.
Get your FGR fix. You don't have to let it go.
Oh, that's perfect. That worked out. That works out perfectly. I love that. Let's go, Chris. Oh, man. I thought you said you didn't have a stat for the women's team. That's a beautiful stat.
It is, like I say, they have fewer games than the men. The league is scheduled to finish by the end of February, but games will get postponed and cancelled to the pitches they play on. Definitely come along. It feels like they're on the cusp of something here. Like, it feels like women's football in general is just sort of growing and growing the speed. And SGL women have got that great opportunity as well because they've kind of become more aligned with the men's team. They've got Hannah Dingley trying to set up a girls' academy. And it just feels like a really good time to jump on board, go along, watch them. The more people that go, the more quickly it will grow and just be part of it. It's kind of been a really good watch. It's time that sort of like it's right that this growth is happening. It feels like it's on the cusp of something special. Which is kind of a joy to watch because the more football there is to watch, the more football I can watch, and I'm happy with that. So
absolutely.
Well, Chris Latham, stat man, thank you as always, good sir. We will see you.
Great talk. Great stats.
Well, not next week. Next week we got Thanksgiving. We'll see you in a couple weeks, Chris Latham. Nice little stat and chat, as always, Chris.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
You know, we're always thankful for your stats and what you bring to this pod. So,
hey,
appreciate you, man.
Hey. Appreciate you, Chris. Stat man. Statman! Statman! What a guy, as always. Statman! Stat in a chat. Have a little stat, have a little chat, Shimmy. Love it. Oh, I love Statman. All right, let's close out here, Shimmy. So we got Barrow in Furness on Tuesday, which is, depending on, or maybe you've already seen Barrow by the time you're listening to this, who knows. But Barrow, man, I cannot wait for this one. I'm a little nervous. A little nervous because it's, you know, the return of Mark Cooper. I feel like, I don't know, big games. That's just, I don't know. How are you feeling right now?
Well, you know, I'm glad that it's a home game because I feel like this is where the fans get a chance to really charge the atmosphere up, right? It has to be the fully charged new line. Can't be half charged. Can't be three quarters charged. You know,
let's go.
We know how a lot of the fans feel about Cooper's tenure, you know, the good and the bad. So, you know, I think it's a chance for them to really make their voices heard and support the lads and, you know, maybe make it kind of a hostile environment for Barrow. You know, I would kind of like to see that. Yeah. We have such nice people. We met such nice people. But.
So we do. And I'll tell you why we do. Or I'll tell you, I'll give you a piece of evidence of that. So our boy, Sean Baker, I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this. He's no longer on Twitter. Shout out to Sean Baker.
R.I.P.
But Sean, so I was curious, and we have a WhatsApp group,
yeah,
a bunch of FGR fans, and so people were, you know, wondering like what's going to be, how are the fans going to react to Mark, the return of Mark Cooper? Are there going to be a lot of boos? Are there going to be a lot of yelling? And our guy Sean Baker, who's a big anti Mark Cooper guy, he's like,
yeah,
you know, one of the leaders of the Cooper Out Brigade. He said, I'm just going to wait for the first goal and sing for Rob Edwards. He said, I'd rather praise our manager in front of Cooper than boo that expletive. sing out loud and thank Dale and Henry for getting us Rob Edwards. So he's going to take the classy route and not boo.
Good.
And so just like you were saying, man, we got nice, good fans here.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be more of like a – yeah, I think it's going to be more positive towards Rob and the team rather than negative towards Cooper. And, you know, there's also a lot of fans who, even though there's a lot of fans who didn't like Cooper, there are a lot of fans who liked him, actually. And you think about, I mean, Mark Cooper got us to the league.
Yeah, true.
And
true.
So I think
you can't
kept us in
that.
The league.
Or underestimate that.
Right, so he played a huge role in getting us promoted and keeping us there. And so I think it's going to be interesting because I think, yeah, it's going to be a mix of people showing respect for what he's done.
Yeah.
But there's also people who, you know, he's burned bridges with, fans and players alike, which is why when we get to our predictions right now,
yeah,
are you ready for prediction?
We are. Well, I was just going to say, it'll be an interesting test for Rob Edwards because, again, we know that he seems to be a fan favorite and he has this great rapport with the club and everyone involved. But I wonder if he sees this as an opportunity to kind of put his, like, a real stake in the ground. You know, it's like, okay, you know,
yeah,
the former boss is here. Now it's my regime, right? It's my way of playing, you know, with Richie Kyle. It's like, okay, let's kind of really say this is FGR is now going on this path. So I wonder how he,
yeah,
you know, that'll be a big question that's answered, I think.
Yeah, man. Whatever happens, I am so excited for this one. It's going to be so fun, yeah, on Tuesday. So here we go. Here's my prediction. I'm predicting class from FGR fans. Straight class. Rooting for our boys. Not being negative. That's what I'm predicting. And I'm predicting 3-0.
Ooh.
Here we go. First goal, though. Not a Don Bernard hat trick this time.
Oh.
That's coming against Bristol Rovers. But Don Bernard will get a goal.
Okay.
Don Bernard gets a goal. Matty Stevens gets a little revenge goal. And continues his goal-scoring run 4 matches in a row. And then, get this, Sean. Breaking news. Sean Mikulski will be loaned back to us from Colchester United for one game. And he's going to get the third goal. 3-0 to the Rovers. We've got Don Bernard, Matty Stevens, and Sean Mikulski scoring for us. What do you got, Shimmy?
Yeah, I mean, something similar. So I think Matty Stevens is definitely going to score. I didn't say Sean Mikulski, but I think there's going to be a certain server from a restaurant where Mark Cooper under-tipped. He's going to score the second goal.
Wow, you're calling Mark Cooper an under-tipper?
Put it out there. Yeah, I said it. Allegedly. No, that's not true. I made it up. But.
So that's something that's not going to carry well over there. Because in the UK, they don't tip.
They don't tip? Oh, okay.
They do, but they tip like cents. It's not.
Yeah, okay.
I think America is the only place where we tip like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, the only place in the world where we don't offer a living wage to service workers.
Yeah, I think that's
so
the best way to frame it. Yeah.
Have to pay for them, not the millionaire, billionaire corporations who run the restaurants. Anyway, whatever. So
anyway, yeah.
But anyway,
my prediction is corporate overload.
No, in the U.S., no. He would be a serial under-tipper,
yeah,
based on a culture, because he wouldn't know that you're supposed to tip a lot here. Anyway, right. Finish.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for helping with the momentum on that one. No, so I think it's going to be 2-0. 2-0. Matty Stevens will get his spike goal. They won't all be spike goals. One spike
Let's
goal.
Go.
And then Jama, our captain, is also going to get one in. So I say we had 2-0. And we're going to get that clean sheet. McGee's going to keep
Let's go. Let's go, Shimmy. All right, Shimmy. Let's quick. Bristol Rovers 3-0. You already know. Don Bernard hat trick. What do you got on Saturday, Shimmy?
Yeah, we'll go to 3-0. We'll go to 3-0 Dom Bernard.
Let's go. Dom Bernard gets his hat trick. Let's go. All right, Shimmy, let's get out of here. Up the Vegan Rovers, baby.
We are FGR. And you know we got it.
We gotta raise hell.
Raise.
Oh, you froze. Hell. Oh, there you are. Praise hell.
Hey, Dale, baby.
Hell yeah, brother. All right. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Cannot wait for Tuesday against Barrow. Cannot wait for Saturday against Bristol Rovers.
Let's go.
Let's get out of here, Shimmy. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you.